And welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Another week, and we are here and excited. Hey, Jay.
Hey, Dave.
How are you, man?
Good, man. How are you?
Good. Nice to be back in studio at the normal time, huh?
Yeah, why? What happened?
I don't know. We were on in during the day.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, what's going on here?
What is that strange yellow orb in the sky? What is that?
The sun!
So bright.
Ah!
So bright.
Terrifying, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, who knows?
Yeah, I don't get to do that very much.
Play our cards right. Maybe we'll get to do it a few more times.
Okay, good.
We are joined right off the bat by a very special in-studio guest. We will welcome him in right now. Jeff Baker from the Seattle Times. Hello.
Hello. It's great to be here.
Welcome back to Montreal.
It's great to be back in Montreal. I don't get back here nearly enough, and I thank God I'm not down in Tampa Bay right now. I think the game's in the bottom of the 12th inning. My colleague Larry Stone took over for a few days, and he's going to be getting some overtime tonight.
I think with the crowd in Tampa, which was announced at around 9,700, I believe, I'd imagine it's thinned out quite a bit.
It would be
as we get to the 12th inning.
Unless somebody's got a perfect game going again.
Well, you got to get out of there quick. The traffic situation in St. Petersburg, Florida, isn't too great. There's not exactly a really first-rate highway system getting you from the ballpark out across the causeway. So, yeah, there tends to be a little
familiar.
Bit of traffic.
Yes,
yeah.
It does. Bad news for you, Jay. Jeff actually missed the perfect game last week.
No.
Yeah.
Jeff.
I was sitting in my condo in Arizona taking in the sun. And I walked across the street to the hockey game where the Coyotes were playing. So, you know, I have a little
that's
bit of an
excuse. That's not so bad. Yeah,
it's
that's
not so bad. You know what? We don't get that many weekends off. This is the first weekend I've had off since spring training began. So just my lucky day, put it that way.
We're going to put Jeff to work in a couple of seconds. We're going to be joined by our first phone guest of the evening, Jim Bombach from Newsday. That's right, Jay. We're just going right off the
what,
top
What
here.
Is happening?
I know. There's none of the...
I'm being bombarded with information.
That's right. No pleasantries here tonight on the Kaufman
okay.
Show. Right down to brass tacks. Jim Bombach writes for Newsday, as I mentioned. I found him on Twitter. We're good to go, Jimmy. Great. Thank you. Found him on Twitter after somebody had retweeted his article after Gary Carter passed away. And he wrote just a beautiful piece. And I've been following him since. And he does a lot of investigative reporting, covered the Mitchell report when it came out. And is now covering the Clemens hearings in Washington, D.C.
Right.
And we're going to get the lowdown on that and see if it's as interesting now as it was during jury selection.
The lowdown dirty shame, yeah.
Well, let's see what he has to say. Jim Bombach, welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you?
Very good. How are you?
Doing good.
Say hello to Jay Farrar and Jeff Baker from the Seattle Times.
How you doing, guys?
Great. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing all right.
Now, Jeff's going to be able to give some context to the players we're talking about, because Jeff covered the Blue Jays for the Toronto Star from 1998 until when, Jeff?
2006.
Okay, so you were you at the pool party, Jeff?
I was not invited to the pool party. I actually remember that specific weekend, but no, I was not invited.
Jim, jury selection is over. The hearings have begun. And what were your impressions of today?
Well, first off, I'm stunned that there's someone, you know, in the room that remembers that pool party. That is a key point in this trial, and that even came up today. It's going to come up every day, pretty much. You know, that's one of the charges, is that, you know, he claims that he wasn't there, and you know, obviously the feds say he was, and you know, that came up today, and it was interesting how that came up today, because the person on the stand, he's the first person on the stand so far. It's the Congressional Committee's chief of staff, essentially like the CEO or the COO of a corporation. That's who this guy is for the committee that held the hearing where Clemens and McNamee went up against each other. And one of the points in going back and forth with him was essentially why was this hearing legitimate? Why was it legitimate to have Clemens on one side, McNamee on the other, saying, you're a liar, no, you're a liar. You know, why is that proper use of a congressional hearing? And his point was that obviously they needed to see the legitimacy of the Mitchell report. And why they wanted to see that was because, and we're getting a little deep into it, but that's essentially what we're doing here in the trial, is that why they wanted to see that was because, you know, when Clemens attacks the Mitchell report, you know, the Mitchell report was essentially a product of what the congressional involvement in steroids at the time. And he attacked it not only with everything, but starting with that pool party, and Rusty Hardin said that pool party was a house of cards, and once that card to the pool party came down, everything else fell down with it. So it's funny that pool party comes up again.
Well, it was a pretty big deal at the time, and the the he said, she said of it all was very compelling.
Without a doubt. And the pool party thing amazes me more than anything else, because here we are, I guess 2007, Mitchell Report comes out, you know, and Rusty Hardin and company are just pointing at the pool party left and right as see, Roger wasn't there. If Roger wasn't there, how can you believe anything in this report? And that was essentially their point. And you had people left and right coming out saying, I remember I was at that party and Roger wasn't there, or I was there and I thought I saw Roger. And the announcers, you know, Rusty Hardin went back and got the broadcast of the announcers talking about that. And that all that stuff's going to come up again in trial. And I mean, it blows my mind that here we are in 2012 now, 14 years after that pool party, and this is a major point of this trial.
Are we at the trial point right now, or is this still a hearing?
Oh, we are at the trial part. It took a week to catch to pick a jury. That was 2 weeks ago.
Which was so much fun, by the way, to follow on Twitter. I don't know if you intentionally did it sort of tongue-in-cheek at certain points or if it was actually that humorous, but it made me think that the Larry David scene in Curb Your Enthusiasm where he's trying to get out of jury duty was really not that far-fetched at all.
Oh, it's very much the truth. I mean, and you know what? I wanted to do nothing except step out of the way and let everybody see the humor in it, because it's just fascinating. And, you know, to some degree, this is how the country works, for better or for worse, but it's just fascinating that on one side of the room, you have this guy who works for the Treasury Department, you know, sounds like he's one of the smartest men, you know, you're ever going to come across. And on the other end of the spectrum, you have a guy on the jury that claimed that he hasn't had a job since 2002, doesn't sound like he's been trying, says that he likes to sleep all day, and when they asked him what he'd be doing if he wasn't at jury duty, he said he'd be sleeping. You know, so these are the people that ultimately are going to be deciding whether or not Roger Clemens lied to Congress.
Oh, America. That's just fantastic. We're in conversation with Jim Baumbach from Newsday. You can follow him on Twitter at Jim Baumbach, B-A-U-M-B-A-C-H. Am I pronouncing your last name correctly?
You are, definitely.
Oh, well, all right. I was, there's not too many things you get nervous about before the show, but that's always one of them for me. Jim, where is this going to go in the next? First of all, how long is this supposed to last?
You know what? It's funny you mention that, because they start out at saying 4 to 6 weeks, and then by the end of jury selection, the judge starts saying 6 to 8. And now whenever he mentions it, he just says 8 weeks. So I don't think they've been happy with the pace of the trial. I mean, today especially, I mean, there were so many prosecution objections. It felt like I was watching one of those old Yankee games when the Posada would run up to the mound every other pitch. So yeah, it's good. I would say it's going to go until early to mid-June here.
And you're stuck there the whole time?
Yes, I'm here till the end.
Oh, my goodness. You can be able to escape and go to a Nationals game at night?
You know what? I'm actually planning on going tomorrow night. I want to see Bryce Harper.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. He looks very exciting. Now, you're a columnist and an investigative reporter. Do you normally cover the beat or baseball in particular?
You know what? Ever since I was on the Yankee beat 04, 05, 06, and then ever since then, I've pretty much been doing this investigative role where, and amazingly, because from what's been happening since 07, it's been the Mitchell Report, it's been Clemens, it's been McNamee. So I've kind of been dealing with this ever since the Mitchell Report came about. Obviously not every day, but pretty much this has always been a constant. And to some degree, and I explained this to my wife, maybe I explained this to myself in my head at times, but you know, I'm enjoying seeing this come to finality here. I mean, this has been a long road, and to some degree that's a statement on our judicial system, and to some degree that's a statement on this whole steroid mess and closing the chapter on the Mitchell Report. But it is, there's something neat about sitting in this room, and to give you guys an image of what this is like, I mean, you can either sit in the courtroom or you can sit in this media room, where the media room has three video feeds. You can see the judge is on one of them, one's on the witness stand, and one's on Clemens and the prosecution table. And that you can work on your computer and you can tweet away. And it's stunning because there is no video feed outside the building. You can't sit in the middle of Washington, D.C. and watch this. The way Washington, D.C. courts are is that these feeds are only inside. So it does feel kind of like the 1950s when a newspaper reporter had full, complete access to reporting what was going on at that baseball game. We have pretty much exclusive access to what's going on in the courtroom. So it's neat from that regard, and it's neat to just see the finality of this long, long, long road.
Which also makes following you on Twitter even cooler, because it's like you're in the courtroom.
Oh, thank you.
It's and you're right. I have that kind of Mr. Smith goes to Washington picture in my head of everybody running to their telephones to speak to their editors.
It's, you know what, it's like that, and it's bizarre in a way too, because hey, you're covering a baseball game, you're covering a basketball game. You know when there's a break in the action, you know how much time you have. The thing with Cord, and I guess specifically Judge Walton, and this is a guy who's you know, familiar with the big stage. I mean, his one of his more recent trials was the Scooter Libby case, where you know the chief of staff for
Dick Cheney
was you know, up there. But anyway, so he'll leave for like a 5-minute break, and we've quickly learned that Judge Walton's 5-minute breaks could be 5 minutes or it could be 25 minutes. So, but you know, you're running to your phone to call the editor, you're running to get a cup of coffee. You can't really you know, judge how much time you're going to have before you can get back in the room.
Jim, what happens if Roger Clemens is found guilty of perjury?
Yeah, he's. I'm fairly certain he'll be going to jail. And it sounds crazy to say that. I'm sure people are home are shaking their heads and saying, well, what about Barry Bonds? I mean, he went to jail. He went to, you know, house arrest, or and he's still on appeal as it is. But I think, you know, memory serves me right, he got 30 days of house arrest that he's appealing. And, you know, I don't want to make too much of a statement here, but I'm sure we'd all love a 30-day house arrest, and I'm sure with his nice home there. But
depending on the house, you know.
Yes, definitely. But that being said, the one thing about Judge Walton, and again, you learn different things about different judges. After the mistrial last summer, he did say, you know, the way I, you know, basically punish people, the way I do this job, this guy, if he's convicted, is likely going to jail. And you can tell that he's bending over backwards for the defense in the trial. He's doing everything he can to make sure that Clemens gets a fair shake, because he's the type of judge that he's a harsh punisher. And Clemens, you know, right now, if he's convicted of every single charge, which probably isn't likely, but let's say he's convicted of every single charge, then the government's looking for 15 to 21 months. So at the very most, it'll be less than 2 years. Probably he's not going to be convicted of every charge. But the bottom line is, with Judge Walton, regardless of what he's convicted of, he likely will see at least some time in jail. And that's what makes this even more you know, poignant, maybe, just to see that this guy really is facing jail time as he steps into the courtroom every day.
Well, I look forward to following you on Twitter and reading your articles at the end of the day to sum it up, and hopefully we can keep in touch during the trial and maybe have you on a little closer to the end of it.
Yeah, sounds great. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. Jim Baumbach from Newsday, we appreciate your time.
Great, thank you.
There he goes. That was some interesting stuff right off the bat, huh?
What will that say if Roger Clemens actually does?
Oh, my goodness.
What would that say?
That would be just a huge bombshell for baseball, I think.
It would pretty much be the end of his legacy, at least with this generation of baseball fans. You know, history might look on him a little differently depending on how we look at steroids in the future. I'm talking about 10, 20 years from now. But certainly he's out there not just defending himself from jail time. He's trying to defend his legacy. Make no mistake, Roger Clemens is all about Roger Clemens and his place in baseball history. He studied baseball history. He is a he appeared as Christy Mathewson in a baseball movie. I think it was Eight Men Out. You know, he's very up on his baseball history. He's very up on where he belongs, where his place is in the Hall of Fame, and that's what he's defending here more than any possibility of jail time. He's out to save his legacy, and if you know, if he's innocent, then he should by all means save his legacy. But even if he is in reality guilty of this, that's what he's trying to do.
This is the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, special in studio guest Jeff Baker from the Seattle Times, who covered Roger Clemens while Clemens was a Blue Jay. We're going to take a little break, and then we're going to come back, talk some baseball with Jeff.
Johnny wishes he was famous, spends his time alone in the basement, with a Lennon and Cobain and a guitar and a stereo. While he wishes he could escape this, but it all seems so contagious, not to be yourself and faceless in a song that has no soul. I remember feeling low.
Welcome back to the Montreal Expos post-game show. I wish. But that song will forever be inked in my brain as that song. I'm sure that song means so many things to so many different people.
With
that
the sound bites of the game going while it plays in the background.
And then right into Gabrielle Morenci to take us through the night. So, you're stuck with Kaufman tonight. Kaufman and Farrar, and we've got Jeff Baker in studio from the Seattle Times. Jeff used to write for the Montreal Gazette, covered the Expos there for the the 90s, mid to late 90s
I actually did not cover the Expos. I covered news. I covered the Palais de Justice for the Gazette for 2 years. I could have had a conversation with our last guest about how much fun it is to sit in a courtroom. But, I did a little bit of investigative work for them. Covered the Alouettes in 96 for them as well. And
the Jim Spiros era, right?
Knew Jim Spiros pretty well. And
was that a humble brag, Jeff?
He ended up. I ended up seeing him actually in Baltimore a couple of times. He came up to the press box to say hi because he lives in Baltimore and was running a diamond mine company at the time. And fronting for it anyway, being their representative, like he did with the Alouettes. And, it was a great experience covering the Alouettes. You learn a lot about the realities of sports when you cover the CFL. It was a great – at that time, with all the problems they were having in ownership and financially, you learn that it's not really the games on the field that matter as much sometimes as what's going on off the field. And that really didn't get resolved in Montreal until Spiros left the scene with a few other people.
I'll take that football analogy and bring it over to baseball, Jeff. Because there's something we learned in this town, it's that baseball is a business.
As much as
we love the game and the individuals who play it and what goes on between the white lines, baseball is a business and it's pretty cutthroat.
It is, and in reality, the fans in Montreal were victims of what happens in Major League Baseball. And I'll say this not just because I'm playing to a local market here, but I've said it in the United States whenever I get asked. I actually got asked by a national columnist last week in Detroit. Because he's planning on looking into this in the future, and I'm not going to mention his name because I want to let him have his scoop, but I mean, he's going to look into whether or not he wanted to know whether I thought Montreal could support a Major League Baseball franchise again. And the reality is, I think, yes, it could, because the reality of the game now has changed so much from back in, I would say, the mid 90s when baseball really decided to get rid of the Expos. It didn't just happen when Jeffrey Loria came here, although that was the final kick out the door. Major League Baseball was a different game back in the mid to late 90s, and right now you've got a game being driven by TV rights values that are going through the roof, and it's just a different economic creature to the point where if you're looking to come in and set up a team in a market, you might be a little more willing to put private dollars into it or a lot more private funding into your own stadium than you would have been, let's say, back in the mid-90s when the Expos were trying and the early 2000s when there was talk about them building the $200 million park here. Mm-hmm. It's different now. You see, where I am in Seattle right now, there's a bid to try to get an NBA and possibly NHL team back there, and the guy who's trying to do it is an investment banker named Chris Hansen, and he's come up with a strategy to use mostly private funds to build his own arena there. It does involve public money. There's about, I think it's $200 million in public money, but it's money that's pledged and that he's pledged to pay back through revenues on the stadium. So it's not a complete win-win for the public, but it's about as good as you're going to see, and I think you could get something like that here in Montreal and really look at bringing baseball back because they've got tremendous baseball history here, as you guys know. And as I know, I was sitting at the game where Mike Schmidt hit the home run in 1980 to beat him for the NL East pennant.
Stan will be in Montreal reunion.
I saw that. I was there at that game. I shivered through the rain delay with my folks for 3 hours, sat there, watched it. I went to quite a few Expos games back in the day and in 94 as well. I was there. I've talked to Jim Fregosi of the Phillies about Will Cordero's double down the line to beat them when it looked like the Expos might be able to come back from something like 8 games out with 2 weeks to go. That was 93,
right?
Yeah. And I'll still say to this day that Mitch Williams was never the same closer after that series because Montreal took him out 2 out of 3 games in that series, and then he went out and blew the World Series against the Blue Jays. And I think Mitch Williams never looked the same after that series. There's a lot of history here that people don't really know about south of the border. I had a conversation with Sean Figgins of the Mariners, Jackie Robinson Day. Figgins is the only African-American on the Mariners team, and he grew up in the South. He grew up in Georgia, and his parents lived through segregation. And we had a long conversation, and I told him, bet you didn't know Jackie Robinson played in Montreal, and he had no idea. And I told him about the Montreal Royals, and and all that stuff. And it's interesting. One more story, and then I'll keep quiet.
No, no, please. This is why you're here.
In the United States, I'm known as the guy that you have to cut off, or else you know, the radio host will be out of a job. But because
nice. I'm saving my voice. I love
it. What do you need these guys for? No, the town of Sanford, which is in Florida, which is going through all kinds of...
That's where Trayvon Martin was
Trayvon shot. Martin was shot dead. Well, it turns out Jackie Robinson back in spring training in 47... Was trying to go through spring training with the Dodgers, and they were actually trying to have him train in Sanford, and the team would go around. It was almost like barnstorming in those days for spring training, and the police chief in Sanford would not allow any games to be played, any spring training games to be played there with the Dodgers unless they shipped Robinson out. They wouldn't let Robinson play in any, so they ended up shipping him back to, I can't remember where in Florida to continue his training, but they basically, the police chief in Sanford, kicked him out. And so,
would that
have
been Vero Beach back then? Was
it might have been.
He might have.
I'm not sure. I can't say 100%, but it was in Sanford that the police chief kicked him out. Now, here we are 65 years later. So we like to think everything's changed in the world, but some things haven't changed necessarily. And I'm not trying to make an indictment on the whole town of Sanford, but they've had race problems that didn't just start this year.
Yeah, I think the only difference is that the police chief was sort of, I don't understand the whole giving off to different community members that you can act as a, and that's a rule in Florida, right? The I can't remember what it's called, but basically you can act as a police officer.
Well, no,
protecting your neighborhood and what, like, you can, neighborhood watchman.
But the police actually told George Zimmerman to not pursue the suspect at the time. Just thank you for your call and back away. And he didn't. He ended up following Trayvon Martin. And
Jeff,
now
I have a
now
feeling
we
could do I have a feeling we could do another half an hour at least on the Trayvon Martin, but I will segue by saying that your Mariners lost in 12 innings tonight to the Tampa Bay Rays,
and they blew a 2-1 lead in the 12th, I believe.
No.
That must have been I'm really glad I didn't cover that game, not because I don't love a good baseball game, but because those games are impossible to write. I can picture my colleague Larry Stone sitting there rewriting his story about 15 times in the last few innings, because he's got to send it the minute the game ends to the internet, which is a great invention for beat writers because it adds to our stress level about 50-fold over what it was 10 years ago.
What about your what are your thoughts on Twitter?
I like Twitter. I'm part of Twitter. You know, I try to engage with readers as much as I can. You know,
I meant more as the time consumption thing and trying to write a story, and you're back and forth thing on Twitter.
You get to learn how to master it a little. Twitter's not the toughest thing that I have to do. I actually like Twitter a lot more because it's instantaneous, it's short, and the blogging part gets to be tough because you can't just blog 145 characters. You actually have to put a thought into your posts, and the readers now learn to expect about 5 or 6 posts from me every day, and some of them are better than others.
Some of it's destroying the English language as well.
Some of it is.
Abbreviations and...
Oh, you mean on Twitter?
Yeah,
oh,
Twitter, yeah.
Oh, that's on Twitter. I'm talking about blogging, but...
Oh, no, blogging? Well, some of that, too. Yeah.
Blogging's so 2008 now, anyway. It's no.
Yeah.
But we do a lot of work with live video on our blog, and we do work with... recorded video as well. It's a lot more multimedia than a lot of the blogs you'll see out there. And we actually did a live show for an hour taking questions from readers on video live.
Yeah, on Ustream,
from
right?
Tokyo. Yeah, from Tokyo, Japan. And that was probably the highlight. We also had Bill James one time on our as a guest. It was me and Bill James in our spring training condo.
Jeff down, Baker showing off again on the
down
you
in,
think I can't get Bill James.
Hey, man, I could name drop with the best of them, but no, we used to joke that he's been on 60 Minutes, The Simpsons, and our show. So his son was a fan, and so we were able to set it up. Bill was very accommodating for us. It was our thrill that night.
I didn't know you were a Simpsons guy.
I'm a pretty big Simpsons guy. Mm-hmm. I like they have some Canadian writers on the show, so you'll always see CFL draft jokes on there every once in a while.
Yes, nothing like making fun of a Rouge every now and then. This is the Kaufman Show. We've got Jeff Baker in studio from the Seattle Times. He'll be here for about another half an hour. Jimmy's got some news for you. Jay's got a big smile on his face. And I'm Dave, and we'll be back.
Very, very special moment for me, my family, and for hopefully all of you, the fans. was the tally. Black was there, Rusty gushed about Jerry, but I knew it couldn't be without talking to Gary. Had to tell him all about the day 6 years prior, the night of his last game, the night kid retired. Had tickets in the bleachers, but I snuck down, needed to say bye the only way I knew how. I told him I made a sign, spent all night drawing, and all I wanted was to make sure that he saw it. The slightest acknowledgement would have been worth the while, but I was thrilled when I got a thumbs up and a smile. We stood together singing the anthem loud, posed for the cameras, held my sign up proud. The next morning, Dad showed me the paper cover. There was Gary Hanon Hart and me right above him. When I told kid the story, he smiled and asked my name and said he had that same pic at home in a frame. Today I got it hanging in my studio office. It's signed, God Bless You, the kid, Gary Carr.
Gary Carr.
Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, special in-studio guest Jeff Baker from the Seattle Times. That is Anakin Slade, the kid. He will be playing that at Hurley's Irish Pub, the first live recording. Live recording. What's wrong with me? The first live version. Well, I guess if I YouTube it, if I tape it,
then it'll
be
a live recording. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
Anakin's going to be playing a couple of songs on Thursday night at Hurley's. There are a bunch of other artists, including Jeremy Taggart from Our Lady Peace, including the Jimmy Riggers, the Blushing Brides, Kristen Bissandry, Joseph Kearns, Phantom Shores from Ottawa. It's going to be a real wonderful night and a great opportunity for Expos fans to congregate and remember Carter, but with a smile on your face, because that's what Carter was like.
It's an Irish wake.
That's right.
It's an Irish wake
right.
And an Irish pub.
Yes.
We'll do it the right way and it's a celebration.
And I'm so happy that you're going to be able to make it, Jay.
I am going to be able to make it.
Isn't that
amazing?
It's fantastic.
I haven't been out on a Thursday since 2006, I believe.
Oh, we'll treat you good, I promise.
Yes, please do.
I know you're excited to bid on some of the awesome silent auction items.
Yes, of course.
You can.
Get paid again, I don't know, after Thursday.
Well, you know, this is you can put on the credit card and worry about later.
Exactly. That's the whole idea, right?
The Sarah Cook Fund will be bringing down their credit card swipe machines. To make things easier, yes.
Okay, good.
Yeah, just so I can overpay for the Ark Hells vinyl that was sent to me in the mail today. Thank you, boys.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always cool when you get to...
There's a lot of neat prizes.
Oh,
well,
man.
Prizes.
Well, they kind
items
of like,
up for auction.
Items up for auction, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that we're going to probably end up raffling a couple of things off as well. Still working on getting a Gary Carter autographed item for auction.
Yeah, my brother has a ball, but I don't think he's going to part with that.
And I have a ball, and I have a ball too, and I'm not parting with it.
There's no way. Yeah.
It's actually a very faded autograph on the baseball, the Carter ball that I have. And surprisingly, the Butch Henry autograph on it looks great. I don't understand.
Isn't it always that way?
Yeah,
that Butch Henry's autograph just comes right out.
Would Curtis Pride know? Well, yeah, you know what? I was a kid, so I probably would take the ball and bring it back over seasons and get it signed. So there's no...
Actually,
yeah.
Sorry to...
No, go ahead, man.
My brother's ball,
yeah.
Signed by Gary Carter, on the other side of it, also has an autograph of Mike Stenhouse on it, which is clear as day. But the Gary Carter, again, is a little bit faded. I guess he wrote with a light hand.
Last game of the 03 season, I got Vladimir Guerrero. Only time I've ever gotten a Vladimir Guerrero autograph. He popped his head out of the dugout, and I was sitting right behind it. So I asked him to sign a ball that I had with me. Signed it in red pen, which is red Sharpie, which already looks kind of funny. But when you turn that ball over, Zach Day's autograph.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Credibility, man.
For every great Expos player, there's going to be a bad pitcher on the
whoa,
other side.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Hey, I love Zach Day.
Okay.
Zach Day is a friend of the Kaufman Show.
That's correct.
We had him on in the summer.
Yeah.
Zach Day.
I wasn't
talking
about Zach Day.
Zach Day follows me on Twitter, man. Come on.
Okay.
I got to be nice to Zach Day.
And I'm sure he's listening in right now.
Oh, absolutely. You know that once an Expo, always an Expo. Tickets are $30 for an evening for Gary Carter. All the money raised will benefit the Sarah Cook Fund for Pediatric Oncology at the Montreal Children's Hospital. It's going to be a wonderful night. Lots of music. Great prizes up for auction. You can win or bid on a trip to go see the Blue Jays play and stay at the Grand Hotel. Thank you to Via Rail for that. Yeah, that's right. We got some connections.
Yeah.
There'll be a Pete Rose bat available. You can bid on a keg from Hurley's. And Jeff Baker, I wish you were in town, man. It's going to be a great night.
Believe me, I wish I wasn't leaving at 8 o'clock in the morning either, because it's an early wake up. But
who are the Mariners playing next?
They're playing, I don't even know who they're playing on Friday. Isn't that terrible?
Are you flying to Seattle?
I am. I'm flying to Seattle. They're playing somebody on Friday.
In Seattle,
yes. So I will be there.
What's it like covering a mediocre ball club?
I'll tell you what, you forget who they're playing in their next series because you're so focused on figuring out what to write off the field and finding interesting things that fans might be interested in. No, I covered a mediocre ball club in Toronto for 9 seasons.
I was just a fan in Montreal.
Right. And yeah, they were mediocre for quite a lot. So I had a really good upbringing as far as that goes. And I also was a Montreal Canadiens fan, so I got a really bad upbringing as far as setting the bar real, real high for the teams that I cover. Because back when I grew up, if you lost 2 in a row, everybody wanted to fire the coach the next day. And most of the time they were fired. So they didn't lose 2 in a row.
Seattle's playing Minnesota.
They are playing Minnesota. That should be interesting. We'll get some, Canadians coming around.
Yeah, the first game is Pavano versus Vargas.
Oh, look at that.
Oh, isn't that good?
Yeah.
Yeah, Jason Vargas and Carl Pavano. Yeah. Carl Pavano, some fond memories from Expo fans, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, great. Great.
Can't believe he's still sticking around after all this time.
I think it's the mustache.
Maybe it is.
It gives him extra powers.
Maybe it is. It worked well for him here in Montreal, the mustache, probably, but not so well.
Well, I think the truth of the matter, Jeff, is that he's managed to stay relatively healthy since he had that car accident that he didn't tell people about in New York.
Yeah, you know, it's very rare to get away with anything in New York, and people were on to him pretty quickly over there. But in reality, I seem to remember he pitched pretty well against the Mariners the last time out. Now, I could be totally wrong, but a lot of people have pitched well against the Mariners the last few years. The team looks a little bit better this year, and they have some young players, which is good.
Good young Canadian on that team.
Michael Saunders, he's having a great year. I'll tell you what, he's a fantastic guy to deal with. And I'm not just saying that. You know, I've dealt with all kinds in this game. And other than Darren Fletcher, who I got to know pretty well covering the Blue Jays, I thought I'd throw that out there, former Expo, during our favorite seasons, watching them in 94, 93, 92. But Michael Saunders is a really salt-of-the-earth guy. And you know, a lot of us are rooting for him because he's turned it around. This guy came back from the abyss. I mean, this guy was so far out of the fans' thought process, the media's thought process, and probably in reality the team's thought process as well coming into this spring training. And he just showed everybody something completely different. He went out and trained with the brother of a former catcher, a Triple-A sort of journeyman catcher, Josh Bard, and his older brother is now a hitting coach privately. And Michael moved to Colorado this past offseason. And started training with his brother and every day. And his brother completely redid everything he was learning. Not everything he was learning. He just changed everything that Michael did as far as his hitting approach went. And that was stuff the Mariners were trying to teach him. But this guy just wrapped rubber bands around Michael Saunders to get him to swing tighter. He made him swing with a 60-ounce bat so that when he swung with the real bat, he would be able to control it a lot more. And, you know, when you're swinging 60 ounces, you can't cheat. You have to really get in a position to hit or that ball's not going to go anywhere. And it's made him a different hitter so far. So we'll see if he can hold up, because if he can, he's going to be a major leaguer and he's going to stick. He's not just going to be, one or two and done. And, so we're all watching, because this is a real surprise for the Mariners this year. It's the emergence of Michael Saunders.
Moments like this on the Kauffman Show make me wish that we had the cameras back in studio, because Jeff did such a good visual during that explanation. He had he had the batting swing going on. And
You know what? We're so used to the multimedia stuff on the blogs now. I don't know if we're being recorded anywhere, so I tried.
There are no hidden cameras. Well, there's one up there, but I think it's only to see if we steal anything.
Yeah, I was
or leave the studio a mess.
That's right.
Yeah.
Which we won't do again,
we promise.
Okay. You've gotten to cover one of my favorite all-time baseball players in Ichiro. Now, how's his English, first of all, with the media?
Well, with the media, he doesn't use it, but he knows how to speak English. And he uses an interpreter. And I have no problem with that. because, you know, English isn't his first language, and it's tough. I mean, I try to picture myself going over to Japan and speaking Japanese, and I can tell you very few of the American baseball players who play over there actually speak Japanese. They all get their own interpreters. It's the same thing. You know, I'm never going to fault a player for wanting to speak in his own language, and he does that because
would
he
you
has
like to cover the Montreal Canadiens
to get across?
Jeff, I
can't because Red Fisher's the guy to do that, and you know I'm not definitely not going to replace Red Fisher at anything. So, but yeah, I'd love to cover the Montreal Canadiens,
but the same language.
I understand. Yeah. You know what? It's not really an issue in Seattle. Some people have made it an issue very, very quietly.
Well, he's so good that it's hard to make it an issue.
Look, the guy's a Hall of Fame player, he's slowed down considerably. He makes a lot of money now, probably a lot more than he should. That's going to be rectified because his contract runs out at the end of the year. But I mean, I'm not going to start faulting him for what language he gives interviews in because he's so good. He can speak Swahili for all I care.
Yeah.
And then I'd be really surprised.
I would imagine I had no idea how passionate and eloquent he was until I saw the 10th inning, the Ken Burns add on. And do you get that feeling from him on a day-to-day basis?
Not on a day-to-day basis, but I get it every time there's a milestone that comes up. We were just in Japan with the team. I actually went to his museum, which is in the city of Nagoya. Before the team got there, I went from Tokyo down to Nagoya, and just outside of Nagoya is where he grew up. And the museum is run there by his mother and father, so I got to meet his mother. And it's not even a museum. It's like a house in a suburban neighborhood, three floors. And on the top floor, they have his desk from where he used to do his homework in elementary school. And they've put the actual desk, his actual abacus, his actual carving tools that he used to use, and all his toys that he used to play with, and his video games, and everything. And it's like walking into the guy's bedroom, and so you know he's a human being. And I think that's what surprises people a lot of times is that he does have human feelings and emotions because he's so robotic with a lot of what he does. Just the 200 hits came so automatically, the 100 runs scored so automatically every year that it was almost a little robotic. And he tries not to make himself the focus of attention a lot. Now, I've criticized him in the past for some of the things he hasn't done. I think he could do more to be more of a veteran presence inside the clubhouse for a team that's lacked it tremendously in some recent seasons, 2008 being one. 2010 being another, and at times he was the focus of a lot of the negativity that went on. That said, I think there's a tendency to sometimes overemphasize those things, and when we were just talking about his passion, anytime there's a milestone that's coming up and he surpasses it, you can see the relief on his face. You can see how visually de-stressed he is, and it's not even happiness. He's spoken about it a few times. It is a sense of relief because he feels like he's carrying the whole weight of Japan on his shoulders, and he really is. When I went to that museum, I saw it. You see all the photos of him with prime ministers, palling around with Obama, with dignitaries, with just being surrounded by so many famous people in Japan, and he's got three trophies there for being the best athlete in all of Japan, given by the prime minister, and it's just all this stuff we don't even realize. This guy is a living icon. He's the Michael Jordan of Japan, and he's got to carry that weight with him everywhere he goes.
So just on a relative scale, what is Yu Darvish facing right now versus what Ichiro faced when he came into the league?
No, there's a lot of that.
Hideki Matsui when he broke in,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, there's a lot of that, but I think Ichiro paved the way for those guys because before Ichiro, there'd never been a star Japanese position player, and Ichiro was the first one that showed that, hey, you can weigh – whatever he weighs now, 165 pounds. He's not a very big man. He's in great shape, but he's not a very big man. And he shows that he came in the steroids era and he played a completely different style. And I think for that reason alone, he should go to the Hall of Fame because he transcended the obvious cheating manifested style that we saw throughout the early part of last decade. You know, walk, three-run homer. And he just showed a completely different way to play the game, more of a throwback way to play the game from a guy that, you know, a lot of these guys could pick up and twirl like a baton, and yet he did it, and he broke historical records that nobody thought would ever be broken. And I think that alone deserves, mention of him going to the Hall of Fame.
Is 3,000 hits still a possibility?
It is still a possibility, yes. I think this season's going to play a huge part of it. Somebody asked me on the air the other day whether I thought he could possibly retire, and I said yes. I think it is possible because he had a very subpar season last year. That's why they moved him out of the leadoff spot. He had only a .310 on base percentage, and that's not going to cut it. It's the worst from any full-time leadoff hitter in baseball last year. And you know, as far as slugging goes, he's the worst of any. He was the worst of any right fielder, I believe, in baseball last season. And so you've got to look at where he's going to go. And I think he's got so much pride that if he thinks he's going to decline a little bit more, then he might decide to just walk away. And he's got an offer to be the general manager of the Oryx Blue Wave in Japan if he wants it. And so I think he'll see what he does this year. And if he thinks it's realistic, he'll go for the 3,000 hits.
Oh, he stands at 2,455.
Oh, as a fan, I really hope that he keeps at it. And that would be a chase worth watching and worth paying attention to, at least over the next 2.5 seasons, I'd imagine, at a minimum. This is the Kauffman Show. We've got one more segment left with Jeff Baker from the Seattle Times. Jay is here. Jimmy's here. John Kakalakis is in the other room, but he is here as well. We'll hear from him later. And this is the Kauffman Show. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kauffman Show. Dave Kauffman, Jay Farrar, and for another 10 minutes or so, we are joined by Jeff Baker from the Seattle Times. You may remember him from the Montreal Gazette or the Toronto Star. And for all of you listening out in Seattle, I think Jeff has proven tonight where his allegiances lie. He is an Expos fan through and through.
I have always been an Expo fan. I get accused of being a Blue Jay fan sometimes, but...
Or at least being an anti-Seattleite.
Definitely not an anti-Seattleite, but I am definitely not a pro-Blue Jay fan. I can't be. I'm from Montreal. I try to explain this to people. It'd be like people, you know, from the Red Sox Nation switching allegiance and going to sit in the, you know, with the bleacher creatures at Yankee Stadium.
Well, only if the Red Sox left town, though. Right?
Maybe, yeah.
Like, I'm trying really hard to wrap myself around the Blue Jays. They came to Montreal on their caravan this year. They had Brett Laurie giving interviews at the Queen Elizabeth signing autographs. Look at you rolling your eyes. I still wish the cameras were here. No, I think it's important for the team to make inroads. They're trying to brand themselves as Canada's team. And the way I always explain it is, as much as I want to cheer for them, as much as I watch them, the highs are nowhere near as high, and the lows are non-existent.
I'll tell you what. I remember when they were in the World Series in 92, 93, and we're not supposed to say this. I could never say this in Toronto, but nobody that I knew here was actually cheering for the Blue Jays. Cheering for the Phillies.
And the Braves. That's right.
You
remember Ted Teeven, of course.
Oh, of course. I used to, when I was growing up, Ted Teeven, for my buddies and me, growing up at Western Laval High, mostly at Western Laval High, before I went to Chaminade High, I mean, we would sit around chatting all day about Ted Teeven. He would be there with Dan McGarity, I think, was his producer. And, you know, we used to remember all the stuff he'd say on the air. He was just a hoot. We loved listening to him.
I have very vivid memories of Ted Teeven explaining to his audience that you had to cheer for the National League team. It didn't matter if Toronto was in Canada.
Even the Phillies, though?
Yeah.
Imagine, especially that year where... We did pretty well against them, like we mentioned earlier in 93 in that series with Cordero. But can you imagine? You know what? I remember that. I remember watching it, and I wasn't cheering for the Phillies at all.
I was happy when Joe Carter hit the home run. I was really happy when Joe Carter hit that homer. And those Jays teams were easy to get behind. They were, it was a different time in baseball. I mean, the Blue Jays were the Yankees back then.
Yeah.
You know, let's go get ourselves David Cohn and his God knows what he was making back then.
And a lot of people don't want to realize that. I mean, we've pointed that out to them. They had the highest payroll in baseball when they won that year. And Pat Gillick did a great job putting that team together. But he also put it together the way championship baseball teams are put together. He built his nucleus, watched them lose once too often over the years, and then went out and pulled off a great trade and then supplemented it with all the free agency he could throw his money at. And then it finally came together, and they got lucky a couple times, and they won. They won the World Series, but that's how you do it. It's very tough to compete. And that's why I think the Expos were such a good team to get behind, such an easy team to get behind, because their payroll was always, lagging, let's say, a little bit behind everybody else. But they had some of the best home-produced, homegrown players you're ever going to find.
You see, and for me, a team like Tampa Bay is the sort of direct cousin of Expos-style baseball. and I look at that Tampa Bay team, and it's a lot easier for me to cheer for them than it really is anybody else. Toronto, Washington. A lot of people here cheer for Washington, which shocks me. I don't understand it.
I'm surprised to hear that.
The amount of Nationals caps you'll see in Montreal, it kind of makes me want to retch when I see them.
I'll tell you, I'm not.
Don't wear any on Thursday to the Carter event.
You won't be allowed in.
That's right.
You won't be allowed in. We'll take your $30 and you won't come in.
But I'm not surprised that Jonah Carey wrote the book Another 2%, and it's about the Tampa Bay Rays. And
we will have a signed copy of at the auction.
That's good to know.
Yes.
So get on down to Hurley's, everybody. But seriously, I mean, it's probably not a surprise. I got to ask him this if I ever see him on my travels. But Jonah grew up, went to McGill University here in Montreal. He was a huge Expo fan. And now that's just getting to me now. Of course he would gravitate towards the Rays. It probably emulated the teams he grew up loving here in Montreal. And now it all makes sense why he would write about the Tampa Bay Rays.
It's kind of impressive the amount of Montrealers kicking around Major League Baseball. You, Jonah, Bill Shaken.
Bill Shaken is now president of the Baseball Writers Association of America.
I still owe him a smoked meat from Schwartz's that I have to figure out how to send to the States.
He's a good guy.
Well, then I'll get it to him.
Bob Elliott just made it into the writer's wing of the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. Actually got a mention from Don Cherry on Hockey Night in Canada.
That's right.
That's the ultimate compliment. I was in Detroit, and they were all amazed by all the writers down there are huge hockey fans.
Jeff, I hope you aim a little higher.
Then getting on with Don Cherry, hey, yeah. That would be my dream. I grew up watching Hockey Night in Canada. I'm not going to get into a debate about Swedes versus Russians or anything like that. But
well, especially not with him.
You know, I'd like to meet him. I think he's had an interesting life. And also, May 10th, 1979, I love it. He sent too many men out on the ice. And Guy Lafleur scores the goal with 74 seconds left in regulation. Yvon Lambert wins it in overtime. Without Don Cherry coaching the Bruins, that probably doesn't happen.
Oh, your credibility in Montreal just shot up, and in Seattle, they all just went, what?
They have no idea what I'm talking about.
But maybe they'll be lucky and be graced by a National Hockey League team soon. Although, if that happens, it'll probably be at the... I don't think people in Quebec City would be too happy.
No, I wouldn't be too happy either. I mean, frankly, I think Quebec City should get a hockey team before Seattle. And if I'm the National Hockey League, I'm taking a serious look at Canadian cities first, because you all see what's going on down in the United States. They don't have their economic act together at all, at any level, right now in the United States. Canada is a lot more stable economically. And I said this in an interview with somebody in Vancouver, I think it was about a year and a half ago, a guy who runs a baseball blog out there. And I told him, you might see some American franchises very shortly moving back up to Canada, and we've already seen it now, you know, with the Winnipeg Jets
right.
Getting a team again. That's not surprising. You look at the economic markets, the stability right now is here in Canada.
And there's parity, too. It's not a 69-cent dollar anymore.
It's not. Exactly. That's what makes it big, between that and the stability of our banking system in Canada versus the United States, and there's a reason for it. You know, for once, a lot of the protectionism that you see in Canada, big six banks and all that stuff that existed for years, that came back to really protect Canadians when it came to their economic stability. In the U.S., we're still recovering from it. And I think that hurts a lot of U.S. cities as potential markets for sports. A
couple of minutes left with Jeff Baker from the Seattle Times. And if you don't mind, I'd like to spend it talking about the Hall of Fame.
Let's do it.
You have a vote.
I have a vote. I've had a vote for a few years now, and it's becoming the biggest headache of my life.
Do you mind share? Are you secret, or do you mind sharing?
No, I
who
can
you vote
share.
For?
Yeah, who do you want to know about?
I want to know about Tim Raines.
I think I put Tim Raines on my ballot. I've made arguments for Tim Raines. If you take Tim Raines' walks and hits and add them up, he has more. I believe it's higher on base percentage than I'm trying to remember now.
Was it Gwynn?
I think it was Gwynn. Thank you.
I read that.
Late at night here in Montreal. For those of you listening on the West Coast,
that explains the extra large coffee.
I'm the only guy without coffee in this room. But yeah, I mean that's a huge thing. Plus, I saw Tim Raines play. You know, I saw him play live. I saw him play. You know, when I was a little kid, saw him play for live for the Yankees on some great teams. And people don't, you got to watch some of these players sometimes. I mean, when Tim Raines used to take a lead at first base, he would get 2 feet on the AstroTurf outside the dirt around the first base bag. And he would get such a big lead because he was agile enough to get back in time. And if he got that kind of lead, you were never going to throw him out. It was, well, walking that guy was giving up a triple every time. Marquise Grissom, a little similar in that way in his prime, but Tim Raines was that guy. And he was such a dynamic player. You know, people don't realize Ricky Henderson.
That's it. One of the things that people don't realize is a lot of these analysts look at the statistics, and they don't realize that for a 10-year period, Tim Raines, aside from Ricky Henderson, was the most exciting player in baseball.
He really was.
And you have
went
to,
there
watch
to watch
him
play.
Yeah, right.
And that changes things a little bit for me. I think you need that in baseball. And the fact is, he played for 20, I can't remember how many seasons
sure.
now.
I believe he spanned four decades. Seriously,
79
to 01.
80s, 90s,
yeah, and
2000.
And he
yeah.
played really good defense for a lot of those years.
Right.
And until a couple of days ago, was the youngest player to ever suit up for the Montreal/Washington franchise.
Teenager, the only teenager.
Until 19-year-old Bryce Harper made his debut.
Right. Wow. I did not know that part.
Yeah.
But Tim Raines, you know, he's got my vote for the Hall of Fame. With Larry Walker, I go a little back and forth on. I have not voted for him yet. I'm leaving my position open on that. It's a little similar, not quite, but I mean, there's park factors involved there with his playing at Coors Field. You know, I have to take a little closer look at it and just look at where things are going, I think, and where, you know, it's hard. You see, the hard thing, the reason they give you 15 years on the Hall of Fame ballot is because perceptions change over time. And, you know, you have to keep an open mind because that's why a lot of people who didn't vote for Burt Blyleven 15 years ago finally did vote him into the Hall of Fame because they learned about some of the advanced statistics and they compared them to what they knew versus what they thought they knew back then. And they changed their mind. And I think as human beings, we all change our mind. And asking people to make snap judgments about folks, you know, any one year, I think you're going to eliminate a lot of deserving candidates. I think some candidates have to make their case stronger than others. And, you know, I think Tim Raines made his case on the field. I thought Gary Carter made his case on the field better than Carlton Fisk did. I think Carlton Fisk got in because he played in New England and had a home run in Game 6 of the World Series. Yeah, and he had a good number, but Carter's numbers were every bit as good as Carlton Fisk, and he should have been in quicker.
Carter kind of suffered from what Tim Raines is suffering from, though, from being a dominant A1 catcher, but being the number two catcher of his era.
That happens a lot, actually. I mean, there's a guy in Seattle, Edgar Martinez, who's a great, I mean, Carlos Delgado, we've talked about him. He told me once that Edgar's the greatest right-handed bat he's ever seen and played against.
Wow.
And I mean, that's quite a compliment because Carlos Delgado's a heck of a baseball player. I have not voted for Edgar Martinez yet. One of the reasons is Andre Dawson. And it took Andre Dawson a little bit of time to get into the Hall of Fame.
Well, people, you can thank Jim Rice for Andre Dawson being in the Hall of Fame.
That was one of the guys that definitely helped. And the thing people don't realize, they look at Andre Dawson's stats and they say, okay, the stats are okay. They're not that great. And they compare his hitting stats to Edgar's hitting stats and say, Edgar should be a shoo-in if Dawson can make it. Yeah, but Dawson played all those years in the National League on two knees that are completely arthritic. He played at Olympic Stadium on the worst turf in the history of baseball, and he ruined his knees, and they were already bad when he came into baseball, and he played above-average defense for a good part of
it's
his career.
It's amazing how long he played well.
It's incredible.
Through so much pain.
How long he played, and he never got a break, whereas Edgar Martinez started getting hurt early in his career and was able to be a designated hitter and did not have to take the field for nine innings every night, and you look at what Dawson was able to do for all those years. I don't know whether Edgar Martinez could have stood up to that kind of pain. And it's a close call for me. I'm not saying I'll never vote Edgar into the Hall of Fame, but it's a big thing in Seattle. That's where a lot of the, you know, he's just a Blue Jays fan, comes from people who don't understand Montreal Toronto sports. They say, oh, okay, yeah, he must be a Blue Jays fan. No, it's because of that, though, because Edgar didn't have to put it to the test nine innings every game. And I think that's huge. I think if Andre Dawson could have been a DH, who knows how many MVP awards he might have won? Who knows how many years he could have played for?
And he might be able to walk normally today.
He might be. I've met Andre Dawson when he was working for the Marlins. I believe he still does work for the Marlins.
He does, yeah.
And, yeah, my good friend Rich Griffin, most famous PR guy and one of the most famous in baseball history. He worked here for the Expos, introduced me to him. Rich is a great guy. If you ever get a chance to have him on the show, you should.
One of you,
Richard Griffin. I'll give him a call.
Yeah,
right,
put
after
in a good
this.
Word for
I'll
us.
I'll put in a good word for you guys. No, I mean some of the years when the Expos were
drop
really,
our names for once.
When the Expos were really, oh, I'm going to get it here after the show. No, but
which unfortunately is now. Did you have fun?
I did. This was a lot of fun. I'm looking. It's 12:03. We probably ran past the sponsors.
Did, and we'll catch up. Jimmy, you'll give everybody an update and let everybody know that the Mariners lost in extra innings tonight in Tampa. That obviously being the lead story here with the NHL playoffs going
on. I'm sure it is. I'm sure people here are really enthralled. And the 9,702 that were there, including my colleague, will be very thrilled.
Well, thank you for not being there and being here. We really appreciate it.
Hey, this was fun. Love coming back home.
Great stuff. Great stuff. I can listen to this for the full length of the show.
Well, it's good. Great. You can also go back to once the show's over and go listen to it on the podcast.
I will. Absolutely.
Jeff Baker, thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. It's been a blast.
We'll speak to you this summer. Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. I do love that song. Never would have thought to play any Dead if I hadn't been listening to the podcast when you and Julie were hosting the show. And our next guest, Craig Brownstein from Puck Buddies, asked to be played off with some Grateful Dead.
Yes.
And I sat there in my hotel room in New York City just wishing you guys would find the right song.
No, we...
And then I heard Touch of Grey.
Yeah, well, yeah, their big hit.
That's right. Their one
their
big
mainstream hit.
Which, you know, having grown up going to a real hippy-dippy summer camp in New York State, Touch of Grey never got played. It was always Love Light for me.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll bring on a very happy, I would imagine, considering his hockey team won tonight in New York City, Craig Brownstein. And look at that. We're going back to Washington for the second time today. Good evening, Craig.
Hey, good evening, guys. Hey, thank you very much for the intro music. That was a really nice touch.
Of course.
Hey, to the listening audience, good evening, Mr. and Mrs. Canada and all the ships at sea. and what was really nice last week when you had Commissioner Bettman on, you played him out with the same song.
Yes.
So I guess the commission and I were both just a couple of handsome devils, I guess.
Well, friends of mine, right?
And friends as well, yeah.
It was nice to have my I keep plugging it as an interview with Bettman, but really more of a quick chat, stick my microphone in his face and force him to answer five questions. But it was good to talk to him, and it was good to get his comments on You Can Play.
Yeah, it was really. Yeah, he had some very nice comments about that, and I'm glad you were able to get it out of him. You know, five questions with a microphone in his face, that counts as an interview.
Thank you. All right. Well, then I will continue to promote it as such. All is good in Washington D.C. right now because the series is even.
Yeah, we evened it up last night, and you know, on your behalf also last week. You know, before we tackled the Rangers, we slayed the Bette Noirs, the Bruins, which I'm sure a lot of you folks dug, or Bette Noir a. Leor, I guess, as you would say in French.
You would not believe the amount of people that are Capitals fans because of that. Last week was, you would have thought that you guys never stole our baseball team.
Well, sorry about that. we'll talk about that one next week.
Not your fault.
But no, that was an absolute balls to the wall series. And, you know, I think the only NHL playoff series that went seven games, all were decided by one goal. Three of them went into overtime. So it was a pretty hairy week. And these first two games with the Rangers have been pretty hairy. I mean, Saturday was a pretty close game.
Well, the Rangers came out so flat. I mean, frankly, it should be 2-0 Washington right now.
Yeah, it should be. But, you know, if we play at the top of our game, we come home on on Wednesday night at Verizon. And hopefully we'll dispose of those rascals. I don't know if you caught the game or not, but you saw any of the shenanigans happening in Madison Square Garden. The Rangers fans have this clever little game that they play to taunt our captain, Alex Ovechkin, wears number 8. And every time the clock counts down to 8 yeah. minutes in one of the periods, they start screaming, OV sucks, OV sucks.
They actually count down at 8:05 left in the period. They go 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Yeah,
OV sucks.
As well.
Yeah. And yeah, isn't it great that Ovechkin scored almost with 8 minutes remaining in the third period at 7:27 left in the third period?
In the first goal, the Knubel goal came almost, you know, while they were shrieking it out, you know, right at the 8-minute mark. So it kind of shut them up. And then Ovi, you know, his little flourish at the end, he, you know, held up his hand to his ear, kind of like cupped his ear, is like, I can't hear you. So kind of like shut up, and 18,200 Ranger fans pretty quickly with a very simple gesture.
I'll tell you, Craig, when I stopped watching the game to get down to the studio, all the announcers were talking about was how dejected Ovechkin looked on the bench, how he'd only played, I think, 6 minutes at that point, and a lot of it was due to the fact
that he had only played 13 minutes the game before.
And a lot of those 6 minutes were because he was stuck on the ice because of icing calls, 2 icing calls.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
Is this the statement from Ovechkin? Do you think that he can turn it around right now? And will Hunter give him the ice time that will allow him to turn it around?
You know, I watch a little bit of the post-game comments, both from the coach and from the captain. And, you know, the captain seemed to take it pretty well. You know, he came off like a team player. And if the coach wants to change up the lines or, you know, go with a little more third or fourth line and change things up, he's going to go with it. And he came off as a team player. And, you know, he answered the call. What little time he does spend on the ice in the past couple of games, he certainly puts it to good use. I mean, he's been playing hard. He's been hitting hard. And that filthy wrister from, you know, the top of the circle tonight was just textbook Ovechkin. It was beautiful.
Tell me a bit about, or tell us a bit about Braden Holtby, because he's not a well-known name. He's the new kid on the block as far as goalies go in the playoffs. And I'm surprised he hasn't been getting the treatment in New York, because I go back to Patrick Waugh's rookie season and the Waz that used to rain down. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, they were taunting them a little bit tonight, and I think they were doing it in Boston as well, up at TDG. You know, they would, after a goal, they would yell, Holtby. But the kid has just absolute nerves of steel. I think he's 21, 22 years old, came up from Hershey. Both are, you know, our number one and number two goalies went down to injury, Michael Neuwirth and Thomas Rokun. And this kid just absolutely steps up, and he's an amazing character. He's got all these little quirks. They're called Holtbyisms, this little dance that he does in the crease, and the way he, you know, throws his arms back and forth, spits his water. And, you know, we'll ride that horse as long as we possibly can. He's been absolutely terrific.
He's
stunning also. He's got that going for him.
Well, good to know. You know, everybody looks the same behind the mask, though.
Yeah, that's true. He took one. He took a nasty slap shot right off the mask, I think, in the second period.
Yes, also. I caught that, actually.
Yeah, but unflappable. And I think, you know, the one thing people might remember is during was maybe the last or second to last Bruins game, one of those criminals on the Bruins was a Marchand or Rich Peverly, went to like fake slash him, and he like, you know, tried to, you know.
And he didn't budge. He didn't budge.
He didn't even blink.
No.
He just like absolutely stood there, and it was amazing.
Craig,
Craig,
you just called the Bruins criminals, the Rangers are rascals, and I'm wondering if we were to visit puckbuddies.com, what kind of unbiased pro NHL journalism would we be seeing?
No, we're a total fanboy blog. You know, we're absolute rab in our devotion. We're tribal in our devotion to the team. But there are a dozen other Puck Buddies writers who do cover their teams. And Matt covered the Habs for us this season, and we've got a Devils writer and a part-time Rangers writer who we haven't heard much from. And we did have a Bruins writer, so we're pretty fair. Everybody, you know, certainly roots for their home team, and we're absolutely rabid as far as the Caps go. And later on this week, we bid high in an auction of the service of a couple of bloggers. Some of your listeners might be familiar with. They go by the Twitter handles of Felix Potvin and Two Line Pass. Felix writes for a Toronto blog called Pension Plan Puppet.
Right, very famous.
And Two Line Pass, Ryan Lambert writes for Puck Daddy. So we paid for their services, and they're going to be writing a couple of blog posts for us this week. And you win their services, and then they instantly become mercenaries, fans of your home team.
we're just finishing up now for real this time with Craig Brownstein from Puck Buddies, and we obviously wish the Washington Capitals the greatest of success on their route to the Stanley Cup, and hope that Craig will be able to chime back in with us during their playoff run. But you announced on Twitter about half an hour ago, 20 minutes ago, hopping on TSN 990 in a few minutes with the Kaufman Show. We will make broadcast history. Does Canada have an FCC? We have an equivalent. But if we're going to make broadcast history, let's actually do that. You mentioned on the Kaufman Show a couple of weeks back that you would be outing one of your writers as the straight writer at Puck Buddies. Are you prepared to do that on air tonight?
We're prepared to do it. And his name is Scott. And he was our Rangers writer.
And you said he's been awful quiet. Oh, sure.
It was your Rangers writer.
Yeah, Scott was our closeted heterosexual on the squad, and he's a fan of the Rangers. He's a great guy. I met him in New York a couple of months ago when I was up there for the You Can Play launch. And Scott is a very cool guy, and he actually plays on, he's a straight guy who plays on for the New York City Gay Hockey Association. So he plays on the team with Jeff, our Detroit writer, and a couple of the other writers that we have up there as well.
Well, it's good to know that you're not discriminating against him because he's straight, but because he's a Rangers fan.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that we hold against him.
Well, if only the world was more like that. Craig Brownstein, thank you so much for your time tonight.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. Thank you, and we'll talk to you soon, I hope.
Absolutely, and we hope that that you can get back in touch with us if the Capitals are still swimming.
Let's go, Cap.
There you go. And this one's for you. This is the Kaufman Show, and we'll be back. Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar. Huge thanks to Jeff Baker for coming into studio tonight. That was really fun.
Yeah, it was really great stuff coming out of him. It was very, very interesting.
So many things that I wanted to get to that we'll have to save for another time.
He's a plethora of knowledge.
Well, I've been around the game a while.
Yes, he has.
And yeah, his anecdotes are fantastic.
It transcends to other sports as well.
Well,
so
it was great to hear about Ichiro. I was really, that was something that I wanted to talk to him about and to gain a little bit of insight on such a mysterious figure.
He really is.
Yeah.
For a guy, and he hasn't been around that long by the standards of how old he is. He's 38 now.
Right. And he's been, since he was 27, right?
Right. At 2,455 hits, I mean, he's going to have to play at least three more seasons.
Right.
So
yeah,
I mean,
touch and go.
He is slowing down a little bit, but like you said, he's still in good shape, and it's just a guy. Yeah, the guy's a hero, especially in this era in baseball.
And if you haven't seen Ken Burns' The 10th Inning, watch it. Watch it for two reasons, Ichiro and Pedro Martinez.
Right.
They give such wonderful insight, and just thinking about it makes me smile. Let's bring in our next guest, Jay, shall we?
Sure.
Okay. Jay Farrar is wearing his T-shirt. Jimmy looks confused, but no, our guest is not on the phone. Don't worry. We're speaking with Ben Christensen in half an hour from the MLB Fan Cave in New York. But right now, I look to my right, and I see Jason Portnoy from True Rivalry. Hello, sir.
Hello, guys. How's it going?
Great. How are you?
Very good. Very good. Happy to be back here. Yeah. Love this show. And before we start, I'm going to say something. I think you guys should have a more primetime spot. I love this show. Love the format of this show. Yeah, it's all the time. This type of format, the two hosts talking back and forth, joking around, having fun, talking sports, this is what I think people want to hear, and not just late at night. They need to hear it prime time. So every listener here needs to call in and make sure that this show gets pushed to a better spot.
Wow.
Wow.
Thank you. Right.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
My pleasure. All right. Good night, guys.
All right.
Good night.
That was Jason Portnoy, everybody.
Yes.
No. Now we will return the compliment in kind. Jason is a local entrepreneur who has really taken off, even so much so since we had him in studio about a month ago. You did a grand tour of New York recently. Your T-shirts are flying off the shelves, and you now have your baseball line out and ready to go. You can visit their website at truerivalry.com. You can follow Jason on Twitter at Jason Portnoy. But once you're doing it, you might as well follow Jason Portnoy and True Rivalry on Twitter.
At True Rivalry.
At True Rivalry. Tell us a little bit about your company.
So my company is a sports line for the passionate sports fans. We're unlicensed, so we could say the stuff that the big name companies can't. We're all about the attitude.
You're the late night radio show of T-shirts, aren't
exactly.
you?
Exactly. I'm the Kaufman show of T-shirts. we're able to get away with a lot of stuff that we say because we're unlicensed, and because of that, we're able to reach a true fan. So I like to pride ourselves on being the brand for real sports fans. We borderline sometimes on being obnoxious, sometimes on being really out there and a lot of attitude. And I think when you talk sports, you're passionate and you're filled with attitude, and that's the way to be.
I quite like the T-shirt that you have on right now.
The Prince of Motor City.
Yes, the Prince of Motor City, an ode to or a nod to Prince Fielder signing with Detroit. You have great Red Sox T-shirts, great Yankees T-shirts that make fun of the Red Sox, great Red Sox T-shirts that make fun of the Yankees.
True rivalry.
Exactly. No Toronto shirts yet.
No Toronto shirts. We're working on that. It should be out within the next 2 weeks.
What's your idea?
I can't tell you. It's top secret.
Trade secrets. Look at
top
that.
Top secret.
Huh? Okay. Well, I'll ask you at a commercial break then.
Sounds good.
Okay.
But if I tell you, that ruins the whole release and the whole presentation that we're going to have to lay forward for Blue Jay fans.
You do not want to ruin the release.
That no, would be, of course not.
Disastrous.
No, Toronto fans expect, some pizzazz with the release.
Do they?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. It sounds good to say that, though.
Pizzazz with release. Fair enough. Whatever you want to call it, the big smoke, I don't know. I'm just hoping that it's a reflects some of the great players that are playing there right now.
Well, it's going to be a cool Blue Jay shirt, and we're also working on something that hopefully we get. We work together with the Montreal Baseball Project to do an Expo shirt, something like Bring It Back and Remember 94 and things like that. We're working. If we do it, we don't want it to be cliched, and we want it to be super cool.
All right.
So we're working hard on that one.
I think just Bring It Back.
Bring It
Back.
Would
be great. Straight to the point, and some sort of, I guess, a red, white, and blue shirt with some sort of weird logo on it would be awesome.
I still want to go down to one of those big demonstrations downtown with a placard that says Save the Expos and get someone to take a picture. I think, we could even Photoshop the Expos logo onto all the red square signs.
Save the join all the student protesters just with the Save the Expo.
I think that would be genius. Yeah. I think it would be genius.
Just everybody shooting Kaufman weird looks,
the confusion on their faces when you're walking around there, like chanting and holding up that placard.
Put a gas mask on so it looks like you mean business as well.
Students who are right now protesting the fact that their tuition is going up. Roughly $1,700 over 7 years is the new option. I don't think they'd look too kindly on the guy holding the sign that basically says, yes, give us public money to build a stadium and
put it in red. Nobody will notice. Believe me.
And you going to do a protest shirt, Jason?
Sure. I'll make a shirt specifically for you, especially for you.
Oh, really?
Yeah. If you go out and do that and join the student protest, I'm with you.
All right. Done. We'll figure out a time next week after the benefit, which you will be attending.
100%.
Can't wait to see you there. I imagine you told me off air, and now we'll talk about it on air. You'll be donating to our silent auction.
100%. The Gary Carter shirts. We'll talk off air what you want. And
I want one of those white tees. Wow, True Rivalry. They're beautiful. They're like, I like, sorry, didn't mean to cut you off. I apologize.
Forget the fundraiser.
Jay's shopping right now. That's right.
I am. I'm on the website. Yeah. Sorry, yeah.
We're talking about Gary
Carter.
I'm like,
Carter, wow, that's Jay. Cool. Sorry. Sorry to cut you off there.
If I'm going to be cut off, that's the way I want to be
cut off.
Yeah,
that's not bad. It wasn't such a bad way. Anyway, sorry, go on.
Wait, we were talking about your T-shirt that's a fundraiser for cancer for Gary Carter.
Yes. Okay. So maybe it's not the best way to get cut off.
Yeah.
But yeah, anything that we could do from True Robbery to help with this.
Wonderful. Why don't you tell everybody about the shirts so that they can get them themselves and what the proceeds go to?
So you could go online, www.truerivalry.com. We have a shirt called The Kid, which we made as a tribute to Gary Carter. All proceeds from that shirt go to the Gary Carter Foundation. We started off saying that we'd only make 200 of them. I think now we're going to have to make more because of the demand. And I don't think people will be too upset considering the money goes to a great cause. And we teamed up with Anakin Slade. Anyone who buys the shirt online will get a free MP3 download of his tribute song. I know he's performing at the fundraiser.
He is. It will be the live debut of the Gary Carter song, The Kid.
Yeah,
very excited to see it live.
Great song, and I'm going to put him on the spot, and I'm hoping he wears the Gary Carter shirt while he's performing.
Oh, he'd better.
Oh, I think he will. I think he will.
I think everybody who knows me knows that this is an Expos apparel. It's mandatory that you wear something Expos at this event. Doesn't have to be everything. You don't have to go dressed like Chris Spire. I don't know why that name came up.
Yeah. Chris Spire?
I don't know.
Was Chris Spire known for his wardrobe?
You would almost think that somebody paid me to say the name Chris Spire on air.
That was weird.
Yeah, I don't know why that's the brain is a funny thing.
That was as random as my interruption earlier.
Jay, I can't even picture Chris Spire.
Right.
Chris Spire is before my time.
Yeah, I remember.
He was mid-80s, right?
He was early to mid-80s.
Okay, yeah. So that's, yeah. Well, there you go. A little... And that's your weekly peer into Dave Kaufman's brain.
Apparently he used to pimp out, too, according to Dave Kaufman.
Well, no, I meant dressed in an Expos uniform.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Should I have said Spike Owen?
Maybe Pascual Perez or somebody a little flashier.
Can somebody please come dressed on Thursday as Pascual Perez?
Yeah, with the Jerry Curl.
That would be that would make my year.
And the bad jewelry and the awful demeanor. Yeah, go ahead.
Still think we should be in primetime, Portnoy? This is the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, special in-studio guest Jason Portnoy. We're going to take a quick break, then we'll come back and we'll kibitz a little more with Mr. Portnoy. Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Coming in on a little Canada Geese. Why? Because I want to hear it. But not too much. we're joined by Jason Portnoy from True Rivalry, one of the coolest damn local businesses around. And I say that because I like him and I like his company, not because he pays me, because he doesn't. So no. It's good to have you here, and it's good to talk about sports from a different angle. And as you mentioned, you're an unlicensed company, which gives you a lot more freedom. You are the late-night radio show of the T-shirt business.
Breaking down the walls and of the T-shirt business.
Funnily enough, the breaking down the walls all started with a stop sign.
Yeah, it started with the Halleck stop sign. Not much attitude there, but it started off, we made the Halleck stop sign, and that caught on more than we ever thought. We actually had two shirts that came out for Halleck. One with the stop sign, one with Halleck it like that. And I actually looked at one of my buddies and I said, well, this stop sign's going nowhere. And the Halleck it like that, we got to print more of these than the stop sign. And he looked at me and he's like, I agree. And then all of a sudden, maybe we sold 30 Halleck it like that, and the stop sign went off, and just goes to show you what I know.
Well, yeah, a real visionary. Eh?
Exactly.
Thank God that the Halleck it like that didn't take off. Because that's just terrible.
Can you imagine everyone in the Bell Center walking around with those signs?
Oh, and that's...
I like it like that.
And the song? No, I can't picture it.
I did see it. I did see it a few times. the placards and stuff. And I think I did actually see a T-shirt that said that at one point.
Well, so, I think it would have been a True Rivalry T-shirt.
Yeah. Oh, it was great.
Again, both of you wearing the... I feel... Well, no, actually, I saw Jay earlier in the day, Jason. So I saw him wearing the shirt and thought, well, I can't wear it now.
As long as he didn't put it on because it came in, he's like,
nope.
Oh, Jason's coming.
No,
got to
no,
put on the True
no,
Robbery shirt.
No.
I had it on before I even knew that you
I was
were gonna on the
say,
show.
I was going to say, I kept it a big secret from you just to see if you'd be wearing the T-shirt or not.
Yeah.
And
I happen to wear it. I wear this T-shirt all the time.
How comfortable is it? Tell the listeners how great of a shirt it is.
It's very comfortable, and it takes about 30 pounds off of me.
Yeah, it's very slimming.
It is.
It's very slimming.
In fact, on my Facebook profile, I'm wearing that shirt.
Yes, you are.
True Rivalry
for
does
all
not...
you ladies out there.
I'm just going to go on record. True Rivalry does not promote the fact that it takes away weight, that it's a weight loss T-shirt. Okay. I don't need any lawsuits, but you look great in it.
Thank you. Thank you.
I think this has gone on long enough, gentlemen.
Okay, listen. I'll take it. Come on.
No, they are... We do like your product, and without fawning too much over your product, I appreciate that you're going to be a part of the benefit, and you'll be giving away a bundle of T-shirts there.
Of course.
I don't know what the exact number in a bundle is. I don't think it's like the same number as if you have a bundle of sticks.
Right.
But needless to say...
We'll do a True Rivalry bundle.
Yeah, and whoever wears it will not need to do laundry that week. Who wins it will not need to do laundry that
There's
week.
There's no numerical value to bundle.
Maybe we'll do a baseball bundle.
I think that would be appropriate.
Some of our baseball shirts, wrap them up and with a pretty bow and give it to one of the winners.
You a music guy? You going to enjoy the plethora of bands that we have down there?
Yeah, of course. Anakin Slade, one of my favorites.
He's okay. All right.
Anakin, if you're listening, we all like you. You're a good guy.
And I'll make the offer to you. We'll bring some Gary Carter T-shirts to the event. What we have in inventory right now, whatever we sell, I'll be more than happy to give half to the Gary Carter Foundation, half to the charity you're raising money for.
Wonderful. The Sarah Cook Fund is the beneficiary of the evening's events. All the money will go towards the Sarah Cook Fund at the Montreal Children's Hospital, which is for pediatric oncology, kids with cancer, and frankly, there's nothing that breaks my heart more. So
amazing. So
yeah, I don't think
people will mind that we're giving half and half. And speaking of charities, I got to do this plug.
Yeah, please, go ahead.
There's a fashion show going on called I Heart Fashion, and half the money is going to Save a Child's Heart and the other half to En Famille. Save a Child's Heart is it's an organization that helps children receive heart surgeries that they can't afford.
Oh, wow.
And it's going to be a great event. I know, I'll plug him again, Anakin Slade will be performing there.
We do like that guy.
Jeez, is there anywhere this guy isn't right now?
And
God.
And True Rivalry will have a whole scene in there where we'll be showing off our baseball shirts.
Where and when?
The event is on Sunday at King, I think it's called King 10 Studios. It's an art studio. And if you want tickets, you could call 514- 1-800-345-6449.
Wonderful. We will put it out on Twitter. We'll retweet it, and same with the Facebooks and all the rest of that.
Great, perfect.
So on Sunday, I'll probably come by.
There you go.
Come on by.
Now you got a superstar showing up.
There you go. Wear that
Not
shirt.
Not as big as Anakin Slade.
Jay Slade will be there.
You got to wear that shirt.
I will, absolutely.
Oh, so you got to do laundry between now and then.
Who said anything about laundry? I smell like love, Kaufman.
Even from here you do. This is The Kaufman Show. Jason Portnoy, thank you so much for your time, good sir.
Thank you for having me, guys.
And we'll see you Thursday.
Sounds great.
This is The Kaufman Show. We'll be back. Welcome back to The Kaufman Show. I'm Dave Kaufman. It's with my friend Jay Farrar. We're here for a little while longer. We're going to talk some sports, talk some stuff.
Because that's what we do, Dave.
It is. We're going to talk, remember when Jose Canseco killed Al Gore a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah. What?
He tweeted something about global warming and wrote at the end of it, R.I.P. Al Gore. And there was a... There was a brief moment last week where Jose Canseco quit Twitter. His account was deactivated. And the funniest thing I saw was some comedian write as if he was Al Gore, as if he was retweeting Al Gore writing R.I.P. Jose Canseco. But I think that Al Gore, dead or alive, was rolling over in his grave when he heard Tim McCarver and Joe Buck, who won an Emmy tonight. Congratulations.
Tim McCarver won an Emmy?
No, Buck okay. won an Emmy. McCarver's only going to the Hall of Fame, but let's hear what Tim McCarver had to say, and let's all have a good laugh.
It has not been proven, but I think ultimately it will be proven that the air is thinner now. There have been climactic changes over the last 50 years in the world, and I think that's one of the reasons that balls are carrying much better now than I remember. The ball that Ramirez hit out, the ball that Freeze hit out. I didn't think either one was going to be a home run, and yet they made it.
So that's your inconvenient truth about it.
Well, I think they're going to find that out one of these days. Yes, I do. That's a theory, but we'll see. Most theories.
Is that not the dumbest thing you've ever heard?
Actually, I think he might be right because there seems to be a lack of oxygen to his brain.
Climactic change. Yes.
So it's change on the greatest scale possible.
I'm waiting for the anticlimactic change to occur, which I think more how it's
Is
going.
Is that stupid or what?
This
Where do you get off?
Nationally televised, Jay. I saw this live. I think it was either Saturday afternoon or Sunday afternoon. And I want to say Sunday afternoon. And I couldn't believe it. I absolutely couldn't believe it. It might be the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Well, when did he get a science degree?
No. This is Tim McCarver we're talking about.
Right.
Former Montreal Expos catcher, Tim McCarver, that we're talking
How
about.
How cold was that water that Deion Sanders poured on his head?
Wow, good reference,
Thank
Jay
you.
Farrar.
Thank you.
That was...
How cold was that water? There's not much oxygen in water. There is.
That was 21 years ago.
It was.
Wow. Yeah.
He's finally seeing the effects of it.
What was
You're
the,
a real man, Dion.
What
You're
was the
real
reason
man.
For that? Was it to do with Dion playing two sports? I feel like he knocked him for playing two sports or something.
McCarver
like that, or?
Said something in a broadcast that obviously got back to Dion. Now, I don't know exactly what he did say. And I think it was in... it was a couple of games before that had happened. And once the series was over... And they had won, the Braves had won, he decided in the locker room during the post-game celebration that he was going to dunk a big bucket of water on Tim McCarver's
Gatorade thing.
Right on his brain case and messing up that beautiful coif of his.
I've told the story
before. It was beautiful.
It was Jimmy Johnson-esque.
Yeah.
Or Stephen Harper, for that matter.
Right.
I look at Stephen Harper's hair and I think of Jimmy Johnson. The same thing, where you could pour an entire thing of Gatorade on top of the head and the hair wouldn't move.
Yeah, it's like on those little Lego figures that have little wigs and you just snap on the wig and it just doesn't move.
Because we run off on tangents all the time on the Kaufman Show, can I ask you all in studio very quickly which haircut you'd rather? Bryce Harper or Stephen Harper?
Hmm.
Tough call, huh?
Yeah, that's a tough one.
Yeah, one dates you as a conservative economist and you know, you look a little blah and boring, and one is just... Well, Bryce Harper looks like a madman. That mullety kind of...
Whose wife is better looking?
Bryce Harper's 19 years old. I would be shocked if he has a wife.
Or a girlfriend.
And I don't like to make comments about the wives of prime ministers.
I'm just saying whichever wife or girlfriend's better looking, that's the hair I want.
I got into so much trouble in the 70s for what I used to say about Margaret and the Stones. So
okay. Okay, never mind then.
You got to let me finish, Jay. I was going somewhere there.
Sorry.
Man, that Goathead Soup tour was epic. You have no idea. Keith sleeping with the gun under his pillow. Margaret canoodling, cavorting with Ronnie. What? You think Justin's listening right now? Come on. Anything I got from the book.
Okay.
All right. None of you answered the question. Bryce Harper's haircut or Stephen Harper's haircut? John Kakalakis. Stephen Harper looks like,
trying
right?
to figure
yes,
out.
But yeah. Bryce Harper, I've only seen him with a helmet on.
No, when he got his first hit, that massive double against the Dodgers with Vin Scully calling the game, as he rounded first, he literally gently took his helmet off to show the whole world his hair.
I'm going on Google Images as we speak.
Go find it.
So am I.
Yeah, I can't believe you guys didn't see it. It was, it's sort of marked in my brain indelibly. And let me just, as we go on about Bryce Harper for a minute here, Washington National Bryce Harper, who I cannot picture in an Expos uniform. There's just, and that's, for me, that's such a healthy thing that I'm at the point in my Expos fandom that I look at the Nationals and I don't automatically think of the Expos. So many.
Look at their attendance.
Yeah, I know.
It's terrible.
It is.
It's terrible. The Nationals are one of the better teams in baseball and their attendance is terrible.
There you go, guys.
Jimmy, there you go.
Jimmy just
I got it. That's awful.
I'm going with Stephen Harper.
Same here.
Wow. Well, I'm going with Bryce.
You'd look good.
Jimmy?
In that haircut.
Jimmy wants hair.
I want hair, period. I'll take either one, but I think I'll go with Stephen Harper on this.
Three
I'm
against
a
one.
Good Canadian boy.
I'm a good Canadian boy, too, and that's why I went with Bryce Harper. this is the Kaufman Show. Wondering if we should take a break and let the conservatives come after me. Yeah, I'll be out on green. Let's see if some libs will stand up for me.
I don't think they'll be flying at the door here, bud.
Well, first you'd have to find some Tories in Montreal, right?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
I think Rod Francis is safely in the West Island right now.
He is.
And if he's listening, we say hello.
Well, Mr. Burns had done it. The power plant had won it. With Roger Clemens clucking all the while. Mike Socia's tragic illness made us smile. While Wade Boggs lay unconscious on the barroom tile. We're talking softball. From Maine to San Diego, talking softball. Mattingly and Canseco. Ken Griffey's grotesquely swollen jaw. Steve Sachs and his running with the law. We're talking Homer, Ozzie and the Straw.
Welcome back to the Kaufman Show.
Softball. From Maine to San Diego, talking softball. Mattingly.
Stanley and Canseco, Ken Griffey's grotesquely swollen jaw, Steve Sachs and his running with the law. We're talking Homer, Ozzie and the Straw.
And now officially, once again, welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Do love that song. It always...
Very catchy.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that Anakin Slade? No.
No, no. I think that was Mr. Cashman singing. Okay. The Talking Softball from The Simpsons, which, well, you know, we all know intimately about Steve Sachs and his running with the law here on The Kaufman Show. If you don't, go back into the archives. But stick around right now because I think we're about to break a record here on The Kaufman Show. This will be Benjamin Christensen's fourth, count them, 4 appearances on our show. This breaks the record.
Does it?
Yes.
Who is the previous owner of this record?
Good question.
Without being
good question,
an analyst.
Anakin Slade, I guess, would be the closest. But Taggart's at 2.
Right.
I think Jonah Carey's been on twice as well.
Right.
That was Craig Brownstein, Puck Buddy's second appearance. Needless to say, this is a momentous time here at the Kaufman Show. And, you know, what a great honor it is to bring in our next guest for the fourth time. And hopefully we won't screw it up and it won't be the last time. And I don't think that's going to happen because, him and I get along pretty well. This is Benjamin Christensen, Shaka Brody on Twitter, live at the MLB Fan Cave. Good evening, Ben.
Hey, good evening, guys. How you doing?
Great. How are you?
I'm great. So I was going to say, how many more times until I, you know, get into the Hall of Fame?
Oh, you're already there, bro. Come on.
All right.
Yeah, yeah. Why not? You're the Montreal version of the Hall of Fame is not as stringent as the one in Cooperstown.
Consider this your induction.
That's especially awesome because I can get in the Hall of Fame and Pete Rose still can't get into the Canadian Hall of Fame.
That's right. Pete Rose can't get in anywhere. He can... although you can bid on a Pete Rose baseball bat from his half season with the Montreal Expos at the benefit on Thursday, which is kind of cool.
Hey, he did get his 4,000 hit there, so I mean,
that's
can't
right.
knock that one too much.
That's right. Now you're done for the day, right, Ben?
Yeah, actually, what's really funny is when I got the call. Sorry, my throat's a little screwed up right now.
That's okay.
I was actually in the car to come back to the apartment, so we literally had just gotten done. And now I'm standing in front of the apartment right now.
Awesome. Awesome. We talked when I left your place on the Sunday when we walked back to your apartment. I walked our good friend of the show and Jay, my co-host brother, Anakin Slade, lived about 2 blocks from where you are.
Oh, really?
Yeah, at 25 Thompson Street.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, not too far away at all. So, and Anakin wrote, you can check it out on YouTube, 25 Thompson. His take on 9/11. He was living there when 9/11 went down.
Oh, that's right. I do remember you talking about that. That's
yeah,
right.
It was very very interesting stuff. And needless to say, I think you probably live in the coolest neighborhood in New York City, and that makes sense because you have the coolest job in New York City.
I don't know. I mean, come on, it could be a stockbroker. That's pretty cool.
Oh yeah, that's amazing. They're
totally
so well
cool.
Received, eh?
Or play for the Yankees.
I gotta do a Gordon Gekko style, you know? Gotta rake in those millions.
Yeah, it's not your style, man. You're too good a guy for that.
That is a good point.
Yeah, I don't see you wheeling and dealing off outside of a baseball diamond. That's for sure.
No.
Now I think
not going to be doing that.
I think, man. Last week we talked about you meeting John Bones Jones before the big fight. And this week, I kind of feel like you should show off a little bit because I know that you did and saw, I can think of at least 3 really cool things that you did this week.
Yeah. I still think the coolest is probably going to be when Justin Verlander came in. And there was a little girl from Detroit who unfortunately is diagnosed with cystic fibrosis. Her mother passed away this last year due to pancreatic cancer. And so MLB and the Tigers brought her in the night that Verlander pitched against the Yankees. Her and her dad went to the game, and then she came to the fan cave the next day. And, just, you know, we hung out. We played some skee ball, and we talked to her. And she can actually – the one thing that I wasn't expecting is she can hurl a baseball like probably one of the best 11-year-olds I've ever seen hurl a baseball in my life. And her nickname is Verlander. She came in wearing her little Verlander player tee, and then when she was being interviewed – Justin came in, snuck up behind her, and yeah, completely blew her mind. And it was definitely one of those moments where, despite how manly I look on the outside, I was pretty much bawling shortly after that moment.
Yeah, there is crying in baseball sometimes, eh, Ben?
Oh, yeah.
It was, you can see the whole thing on the MLB Fan Cave website as well. The video is incredibly touching. After Verlander finished hanging out with this girl, you guys went down to watch a high school ball game, right?
Yeah, it was actually just a couple blocks away from where the Brooklyn Bridge is, so it was just right on the waterfront. And he and comedian John Glazer, who is most notably known from Cheap Seats and the Conan O'Brien Show, the two of them actually did commentary, a little play-by-play during the game, but even in which case he was just showing all the guys how to get fingers set up to throw pitches. And the one thing I didn't realize is Verlander just never uses the seams when throwing any pitches, which, I mean, for a guy who can top 100 miles an hour while throwing a no-hitter on his last pitch, I find that very incredible.
Well, he from watching those two videos and his appearance at the Fan Cave, you really got to see what a good guy he is. And it's cool to see that arguably the best pitcher in Major League Baseball is also a real A1 dude.
Oh, absolutely. And just smiling all the time. And anybody who stopped by and wanted a photo or an autograph at the ball field, he was more than happy to accommodate. And yeah, I had a feeling that's the way he was going to be, and I was glad to be proven right on that matter.
We're in conversation with Ben Christensen. You can follow him on Twitter at Shaka Brody. Ben is in the MLB Fan Cave all summer long, another 2,400 odd ball games to go. And we're hopefully going to be cheering him on the whole way through the World Series.
That'd be great.
It's going to happen, man. It's a fait accompli. You know that if it's an MLB-sponsored contest and you have Montreal on your side, good things are going to happen to you.
Have you seen the commercial that MLB.com/tickets has been running?
I haven't, but I hear you figure prominently.
Yeah, in the very middle of the commercial, it's a snapshot slideshow. And three of the shots are of me, but the really funny thing is the close-up they have of me is actually of the Expos tattoo.
Oh, that's just awesome.
Yeah, I agree.
Now, your Expos tattoo is actually of Screech, the Washington Nationals mascot, in an Expos uniform, a Gary Carter Expos uniform.
Yep.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Now, I just want to very quickly touch over the other two cool things that I'm thinking of, and I'm sure you did a million cool things last week, but you took a double-decker bus tour of New York City hosted by...
by Mr. Logan Morrison.
Lomo.
The lovely left fielder of the Miami Marlins, who I didn't realize until, for some reason, after the tour, he's actually leading the team in batting average, which, based on last season, he was actually...
Well, he was sent down last year. He was sent down.
Yeah, exactly. And he's batting, I think, around .318 right now. And actually, he cranked a home run today, which was awesome. So he got to set off a little contraption they have in center field.
And, a little?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a little more than little. I'll give it that. No, it's luxurious. Is probably the best word to describe that.
Ben, it looks like the facade of Mr. Burns' casino.
Mm-hmm.
If you can picture that, or go Google it afterwards, it looks a lot like the opening of Mr. Burns' casino.
No, that is spot on. But he the tour he gave us. I mean, I will say it was probably one of the worst tours of New York anybody can ever take, but it was also one of the funniest tours of New York anybody could ever take. I mean, the guy...
Does he know New York?
No, he doesn't at all, which made it even better. And, I mean, Bryant Park, which is a little bit near Union Square, I believe. I mean, he just went into this whole riff about, oh, yeah, you know, it's named after Bryant, you know, longtime NBC reporter Brian Cumble, and we're still trying to work in some kind of name for Greg, you know, somewhere, some kind of a landmark. And then the brief history of New York was, of course, started by John Adams, who essentially mated with Sacagawea to help populate the city. And then she was involved in some kind of a trade deal.
Wow.
Yeah, it was so off and just, I don't think anybody was not laughing on that bus.
I think that between him and his manager, we could get a real good revisionist history of the Americas.
Oh.
He's from Kansas City, so.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Or at least like a good workshop on how to tweet properly.
Yeah, well, he is a hell of a tweeter. We will give Logan that. Number three on the list of awesomeness that you experienced this week was in Washington Square Park.
It was. That was kind of an interesting experience because Ashley, the Giants fan, I pretty much vowed that I wasn't going to wear any Giants stuff that day just because, you know, we love having her around so much, and she's such a diehard Panda fan, even a bigger Sergio Romo fan. And so to have those two guys there was just like the highlight of her trip so far. But what we did there was set up like a lemonade stand, and they were giving away like handshakes, but they were doing it for charity. So people had to, you know, drop a quarter in the jar and do a custom handshake with Panda. And the funny thing about it was I brought a black hooded sweatshirt and jeans and my sunglasses. And when they were in the fan cave taking photos, I was just wearing, you know, a hat and my A's gear. And somebody suggested, it's like, dude, put on your hooded sweatshirt and your glasses and show them what you look like. And so I ran over and did. And as soon as I turned around, both of them were just floored at the resemblance I have to Brian Wilson. And so with that, they're like, okay, dude, you got to come out. You got to come out dressed like that. You know, we want to see how this goes. So I did. And I was basically kind of working crowd control, but just, you know, just talking to people while they're in line waiting and such. And I literally had five people come up and ask for an autograph because they all thought I was Brian Wilson.
Right. Did you explain to them who you were? Did you sign some Brian Wilson autographs?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. I mean, I told them, and they're like, well, can I at least get a picture with you? I'm like, of course.
Huh, cool. That makes sense.
It was a treat. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, boy. You got to work on that cough, man. Way too much barking like a dog, right?
I know. Seriously. I don't know what happened, but for some reason, it just kind of came up in the last hour.
I'll only do it to you once, and just to give context to that, every time that Ben hears the name Jason Worth,
oh,
he has to bark like a dog.
That's it. Make his voice even worse.
Right. Well, that's why I said we'll only do it once for context. We're just finishing. Sorry, go ahead, Ben.
They had the day off. They had the day off today, so it's like I'm just completely out of the game.
Well, that's all right. It sounds like your throat needed the day off from the barking.
I think so.
We're just finishing up with Ben Christensen from the MLB Fan Cave. You can follow him on Twitter at ShackaBrody, and also please vote for him at the MLB Fan Cave website, MLBFanCave.com. Ben, how on earth are you going to top last week this week?
Oh, man. Tomorrow's going to be a splendid day. We actually have Andino and Adam Jones coming in from the Orioles tomorrow. And also we're doing a workshop with Majestic Apparel.
Oh, man, you must be happy.
I'm floored. I've been waiting to talk to these guys all season, and I'm sure they've been feeling the exact same way with me with all the photos I've been sending them. But we have to actually design our own T-shirts, in which case I'll just throw a spoiler out as far as what I'm designing. The tattoos that I have on the side of my body, I'm actually going to try and design a T-shirt around those.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, so we'll see how well it can. Clearly, I'm going to have to do a little bit of editing on it for profanity and, yeah.
Hey, Ben, what people don't know won't hurt them. And frankly,
exactly.
If somebody asks you, what's the meaning of this one, for example, you don't have to be totally truthful. You know,
yeah,
so there's a little too much red ink in the eyes on one of them. It happens. You know, we're all human. We make mistakes.
Would Major League Baseball consider the word expos profanity?
That is a valid point.
Yeah.
I think we are actually going to have to change that one up a little bit, which I'm kind of disappointed with. But
I wasn't far off, huh?
Wow. Well, add a end that on a sour note, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'll see what they say about it. I'm going to keep it the way it is. And I mean, obviously, they're going to have the final say in it, so.
Well, I can't wait to see it, and I can't wait to rock one, to be honest with you, Ben. So when you get those printed up, make sure an extra copy goes to me.
I will definitely do that.
Thanks, man. And we'll speak to you hopefully next week, and I'm sure you and I will be in touch throughout the week. And we'll be thinking of you at the Gary Carter event on Thursday. I know that if you weren't at the Fan Cave, you would be there with us.
I absolutely would, and I hope everything goes well with that, and I hope you guys definitely raise a lot of money for that charity.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Benjamin Christensen, live in New York City on Thompson Street, not too far from Broadway and 4th, where the MLB fan cavers will be going at it all summer long. Say hi to the gang for me.
Will do. Take care, guys. Thank you again.
All the best. And there he goes, Benjamin Christensen. Follow him on Twitter at Shaka Brody if you love baseball. And frankly, he'll make you love it even more.
Yeah. Talking when he was talking about being in the Oakland A's outfit, yeah, with that beard and long hair, he would suit a 1970s Oakland A's player perfectly.
Yeah.
As they were encouraged at that time to grow their beards and their hair in order to get more of an admiration from their fans.
This was the Charlie Finley A's.
That's right.
Right? With the
the orange balls.
That's right. Yeah.
The, yeah.
Exactly. Players
in shorts.
You know who the, I think it was early 80s, who the bat boy was for the Oakland A's?
Who?
You'll like this. It's MC Hammer.
Really?
Yeah.
I think I knew that.
Yeah, it was a pretty big story once.
Should have stuck with it.
Well, yeah, I don't know.
At least it's a job.
Oh, wow.
Well, whatever. MC Hammer, who cares?
Yeah, seriously. Too soon? What?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Let's go to the phones. 514-790-0990. If you're out of town, 1-866-896-2546. Jimmy, I cannot see because a computer is blocking that computer.
Wow.
Yeah, very visual.
That's a rare
radio
occurrence,
huh?
Yeah.
Yes, you're showing me an A's uniform. Excuse me?
With MC Hammer,
That's MC Hammer.
That's MC Hammer.
Cool.
Wow.
Number 44.
Wearing
Reggie Jackson jersey. Yeah.
Excuse me, it says Hammer on the back of that jersey.
Really?
Yes, it does.
So he was MC Hammer before he was MC Hammer.
That's blowing my mind right now.
Was he born? Oh, that's weird.
Yeah, John, would you mind Googling MC Hammer for me and giving me a little context? I'd like his real name, and I'd like to know when he became Hammer.
Well, clearly it was when he was a child.
Well, didn't he drop the MC at a certain point, like in the Too Legit to Quit era,
yes,
of MC Hammer?
Yes.
Now we're really digging deep. I bet we're gaining listeners right now.
Right, yeah. I'll just become Hammer. And then he just became a symbol of a hammer.
And then he just became a symbol of what happens when you...
The artist formerly
when you make
known
$40 million and then spend it all.
Right.
Let's go to the phones. Speaking of people that have squandered fortunes, our good friend John in Denver. Hello,
John. Squandered fortunes? Don't you have to have a fortune? I mean, I'm not Stanley Kurt Burrell, a.k.a. MC Hammer.
Boom! Boom! Look at you. Thank you, sir.
God bless Wikipedia and you guys talking too much while I'm on hold.
How are you, John?
I am fantastic. How are y'all?
We're great. We're having a wonderful day. I know you were madly taken by the soccer match this afternoon.
Yeah, I got carried away.
That was Manchester City versus Manchester United.
No, the good team you said second, even though they lost. I'm all depressed about that.
No, you're not. You cannot care
about...
Actually,
I am. They're my team. Are you kidding me?
You've never been to Manchester, England, across the Atlantic Sea. Really?
Yes.
Good for you, man. Wow.
Don't tell me I haven't. I'm going again in a few months. When the season starts up, I'm going on a 3-stadium tour.
I stand corrected, good sir.
Yeah, you do. Anyways, I'm disappointed in Ben.
Why?
First of all, I tweeted him about 15 minutes ago to bark for Jason Worth, but he didn't do it for me.
Well, you heard his throat.
He was standing outside
scratchy.
His apartment.
Hey, he's not on IR. He's not on the DL.
There is no DL at the Fan Cave. They're like the Postal Service, man, through rain, sleet, snow, and hail.
Except in the U.S. where it's going bankrupt and we won't have service very often anymore.
Don't worry. Cliffy Clavin will still be bringing you the mail.
Ah, man.
It's going to happen.
Anyways,
everything's by email now anyway. Come on.
And I was disappointed anyways because, you know, he didn't say he knew your event would go off without a hitch. He knew it. I know it's going to happen. I know it's going to go well.
Oh, thanks, John. Thanks.
And if I actually was in Montreal and, you know, had free time and $30, I'd be there.
Well, you shouldn't have squandered that fortune, eh, bro?
Yeah. Damn Hammer. I should never use him as an accountant, I guess, huh?
Damn Hammer.
Damn Hammer.
Things
Damn
I didn't expect to be, well, anyway. What's going on, John?
Oh, man, who knows? I had stuff to talk about, but the Hammer talk kind of derailed that.
Well, okay. Oh, you enjoy our baseball talk from earlier in the show, our Roger Clemens talk?
Well, I actually missed that part, but I can only assume if you'd let me riff on his needles. He has a needling personality, don't you think? He's very abrasive.
I see where you're going with that.
Yeah.
You're a very clever man, John.
He's a pain in the butt. I'm not clever. I'm lowest common denominator. How have you not figured this out by now?
Well, we've got to bring a little bit of everything to our show, don't we?
Well, yeah, I guess so. Oh, man.
Why do you always call with the uggs and the oh, mans?
It's who I am. I'm the oh, man, Crazy John in Denver.
Well, Crazy John in Denver, we look forward to your comments on society
still?
Next week.
Still? You're still looking forward to these? Haven't I worn out my welcome yet?
Okay.
The Great White North.
John, do you want us to say this is it? We don't want you to call anymore? Come on. You put
no,
me in my place.
Not.
You told me that you've been to Manchester, England, across the Atlantic Sea, and you're a genius. What can I say?
I'm crazy, too. Like that pizza guy. I'm crazy.
Pizza guy.
Little Caesars.
Ah, yes. It all comes back to Mr. Illich, does it not?
And I hate him very much and wish, well, never mind.
All right.
I have not eaten Little Caesars since I was 10 years old and realized he owned the Red Wings.
It's a Detroit, Colorado thing. Yeah, right. This is where this is
coming.
I will
not support Little Caesars as long as it's still paying contracts.
All right. Well, John, best of luck with that boycott, and we'll catch you next week.
Hey, when do I get to win my hockey stick, huh?
I don't know. We'll try and rig it sometime in the fall.
Tell you what. How about this?
Yeah.
The week leading up to the 26th, I will actually give you a real soccer breakdown of the Impact Rapids game. How about
that? What are you going to do if the Impact beat the Rapids in that game?
Nothing.
No. You got to bring it. You got to do something.
You really want me to tell you what I'm going to do?
Yeah, well, look, now that, not that I'm an Impact
fan,
but...
I'm going to get maple syrup boiling and pour it all over myself.
And we are done. John, thank you so much for your time tonight. Catch you soon, buddy.
Good one.
Bye-bye. I don't know what he looks like, but I don't want to see that.
No.
I'm just saying. We got a couple of minutes before break here, and, I know we're going to talk some baseball because that's what we do, and I know we're going to talk about the Carter benefit, but John Kakalakis is with us right now in studio. And, John, what went on tonight? Two crazy hockey games, huh?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'd like to give major props to the Los Angeles Kings. They're for real.
Yeah, seriously, huh?
And in a very ironic and odd playoff season, I mean, we're just looking on the television right now. That's the fourth shorthanded point by... But Dustin Brown, and that's a record that he tied Zetterberg. But I'd like to talk mostly about Alex Ovechkin, his ice time.
Yeah.
Does anybody know Jay Beagle besides his family or anybody else? he literally logged almost 7 minutes more than Alex Ovechkin.
Yeah.
When I look at even strength, he is ninth on the depth chart from all the forwards. That is remarkable. And just roughly 12 months ago, everybody was talking about Ovechkin maybe being better than Sidney Crosby.
Right.
I mean, if Dale Hunter goes out there and gets to the Eastern Finals or wins a cup, I mean, he should be the next president of the United States.
You know what? This could be the greatest rope-a-dope in history.
It's unbelievable.
If Ovechkin can turn it on at some point, he's going to be rested with half the playoffs.
Well, he is turning it on, but because of his lack of ice time, and this was pointed out earlier in the game.
Does one goal equal turning it on?
Well, before he had the goal, a lot of analysts were saying that because he has a limited amount of ice time, he's doing way too much.
Mm-hmm.
He's trying too hard. He's all over the ice. And sometimes when you try too hard, I mean, it kind of kicks you in the ass.
I believe the cliche is squeezing the stick too tight.
You're overdoing it.
Right.
Yeah. You're overdoing it. He's trying to do everything on the ice. He's trying to hit everybody. He's taking shots from stupid angles.
But I get the hitting part because, and that's something that we saw actually during the Olympics as well when Ovechkin was not at his top form.
Right.
He knew that he had that aspect to the in his arsenal, if you will. And, I mean, do you remember him laying out Jágr?
Yeah.
In the Russia-Czech game?
Yeah. Well, even in the first series against the Rangers, at one point he was leading both teams in hits in the series. And, I mean...
I'm sure a lot of that's taking out his frustration on the ice as well.
Yes. And that's it. Trying to prove too much with as little time as he's been given from Hunter. So, I mean, we'll see. In the end, he got his goal at 7:27 left, just after the OV chant.
That's right.
So, I mean, we'll see how that goes. Maybe he'll get some more ice time next time. Maybe he won't. Who knows?
I hope the Caps advance.
Yeah.
I do.
Why not?
I absolutely hope the Caps advance.
Why not? Long-suffering franchise.
That's right. That's right. And
got a soft spot for those guys always.
I would like to see a Washington-Philadelphia conference final. And I'm okay with it being Phoenix-LA. I really am. I'm okay with Phoenix winning the Cup this year. I don't think that they have the horses to win the Cup, but I'm cool with it. I think it would be a great, especially if the franchise ends up leaving. I mean, wouldn't you have killed for a World Series in 2003, even knowing the Expos were going to be gone within a couple of years? That would have made, it would have made today a lot more palatable.
Yeah.
And I think that for the few fans that exist in Phoenix, let them go out with a bang instead of a whimper.
Right.
But they have one major horse, and if he keeps riding the way he is, Mike Smith.
Yeah.
And yeah, the way they're playing as a team.
We know in this town how far a hot goalie can take
absolutely.
You in the playoffs. Yeah. So. Well,
yeah, and there's a few of them right now.
I know that most people are rooting against the Coyotes, mainly because they think that the quicker that that franchise is out of the playoffs, the quicker that they're in Quebec City.
I could never do that to another team
no.
after what happened to us.
No, and you know what? The fan in that Sonic Skate movie, which if you guys haven't seen, first of all, check out our interview with director of Sonic Skate, Jason Reed, and go to their website. We had Jason on last week's episode. But just first of all, it's an incredible, incredible film about how the Supersonics were stolen out of the city of Seattle and became the Oklahoma City Thunder. But one of the people that they profile is a Sonics fan by the name of Sherman Alexie. And to hear him talk, guys, it's so powerful to hear how he doesn't want to steal another team. He knows that New Orleans is in trouble. He knows that Memphis is in trouble. He doesn't want to be the guy cheering for somebody else's team. And I feel that same way. I don't want Tampa Bay. I mean, I'll take them and I'll cheer for them. But I don't want to do that. I don't want to have somebody else go through what we went through. Let's take a call. We've got Eric in Montreal, 514-790-0990. Good evening, Eric.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Great. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How about for starters, if Grand Rapids beats the Impact, I will shave Listen to the Kaufman Show on my head.
You must have a very large head, my friend.
I do have a large head. I just want to talk about
And then we will buy you a hat.
To cover it up, eh? No, just a couple things. First off, Albert Pujols. I think the reason why that he's doing the way he is because of the quality of pitching in the American League versus the pitching in the National League.
It's
what do
not
you think about that?
It's not that staggering a difference. It's that, you know, if Albert Pujols had played his entire career in the American League, I still think he'd have a comparable home run.
It might be an unfamiliar. Sorry, it might be an unfamiliarity.
I think that's a
issue.
Huge part of it, and
yeah.
And not to mention that he spent from, you know, the day he was drafted until the last out of the World Series last year as a member of the St. Louis Cardinals organization. This is a huge change for him, his family, just getting used to it. And frankly, the fact that the Angels have struggled doesn't bode well for him. But the season's so long, you know they're going to turn it around. You know that at the end of September, Albert Pujols' numbers are going to be right up where
he'll
they normally are.
Well, for somebody who has him in a fantasy pool, I sure hope he does. But I think he will come around to doing it. I just, like I said, I think it was the style and the change as well as the family. I wanted to get your take on the Detroit Tigers left fielder that was suspended for 7 games.
Oh, sure. Ask the Jewish guy, huh?
I would just think about 20 years after the Rodney Caney incident, I thought he'd get suspended for at least a year. I don't know. I think seven.
Why? Really?
Why? Well, because he's supposed to set an example. I mean, he got arrested. He got into a fight. He started, you know.
3 in the morning, he's in New York City, and he said something about the damn Jews, right?
Yeah, it was an anti-Semitic remark.
Yeah. Frankly, you have no idea how often that goes down, Eric. We live in a very tolerant city, but the times that I've spent outside of it, in smaller towns, in towns where if somebody finds out I'm Jewish, and frankly, I'm not the most overtly Jewish person in the world by any means, but if they do find out they hear my last name, whatever it is, and they say, oh, I've never met a Jew before. Like, I would imagine that Delman Young did not grow up around Jews and did not realize that that was an offensive remark. I think he probably saw somebody with a yarmulke on in New York City. And I'm not defending the guy, but I think this happens a lot more than we know. And
I don't
think
he knew anywhere where he was at that point.
I've heard a lot of ridiculous anti-Semitic remarks made in bars, made on street corners, made by coworkers that didn't know better. And that Bavaria story I said a couple of weeks ago, Jay, trust me, that thing went a hell of a lot worse. And yeah, you know what? It's out there. And do I think Delmon Young was right? No. Do I think that a lot of people share his views? Probably. And most people know to keep their mouths shut. Delmon Young screwed up, and what was it? It was a 7-game suspension, right, Eric?
Yeah, 7-game suspension. That's correct.
Well, I would imagine that is Mr. Ilitch Jewish? Is
no,
Mr. Dombrowski Jewish?
No.
Really, Dave Dombrowski's not Jewish?
I honestly don't know.
Okay, well, it sounds like a Jewish last name to me. The point of the matter is, this is a stain on Delmon Young, who this is the same guy that had the through the bat in the minor leagues. He's had temper issues throughout his career. You mix alcohol in with temper issues. And, you know, I look at that. I don't think that Delmon Young hates Jews. I think he made an ignorant, stupid remark that he's going to pay for now.
No, we all make mistakes. Like, everybody makes mistakes, you know. My first day of school in moving from Ontario, I was dressed like Garth Brooks with a white cowboy hat and cowboy boots. And let me tell you, when I got home, my white hat was not white. And I don't know. I just find that 7 games is a little bit light.
Eric, if that was nowadays and Carey Price was doing what he was doing, you just would have been loved for that.
I probably would have. But, hey, I got over it. One last thing, guys.
Yeah.
One thing that's starting to piss me off, too, is on the other French channel with the with the sports commentator, he's telling his audience that Pierre Maguire is nothing more than a good pro amateur scout. And,
you know what? You see a lot of that on Twitter too. There are two groups of people. There are the people that are for Pierre Maguire, and there are the people that are for anybody but Pierre Maguire. And,
well, I just find that completely irrelevant. I mean, Pierre Maguire is the most knowledgeable hockey analyst that there is out there. The proof is he's nominated for Emmy for the first time, and I find that pretty cool that he'd win the Emmy and become a GM.
Let's not use that as the example because Joe Buck won an Emmy tonight.
Oh.
but your point is well taken. I think that, you know, you said he's one of the most knowledgeable analysts out there. And frankly, I think that Pierre gets a lot of knocks because we see him so frequently, because he's on television. You know, we don't know what Marc Bergevin thinks about A, B, C, D, E, F, or G. We know what Pierre thinks because we see Pierre talk about it. We hear Pierre talk about it on this station. Because of that, we know Pierre a lot more intimately. If he says something that's wrong, people jump all over it. And I think that's unfair. Now, there are a lot of hockey people that become analysts. There aren't a lot of analysts, established analysts, that go back the other way. Now, Pierre does have a Stanley Cup. He was an assistant coach for the Penguins.
He was coach of the Hartford Whalers.
That's right. He also
and coach of the Hartford.
That's right. And you know, we've all heard the stories about him molding Chris Pronger into the player that he is today.
And he was taught by Scotty Bowman and the Bowmans. And you know, if you can't get the Bowmans, you might as well get something close.
I'm a big fan of Scotty Bowman. And anybody that Scotty Bowman thinks is good enough to be the head of this franchise,
I think should
deserve serious consideration. And for that whole camp out there that's going to say that Pierre, if Pierre gets the job, is going to say the only reason Maguire has the job is because he's friends with Jeff Molson, I think that's ridiculous. I don't think that Jeff Molson would put his ass on the line
He's friends with, no. And if it would have been the case, it would have probably been done a long time ago.
Right.
If it would have been just for being friends, he would have brought in Pierre a long time ago.
Eric, we'll see what happens. I'll tell you, whoever it is, the fan base needs to show patience. And if they don't show patience, then it'll be the same garbage over and over and over again. And in 6 months or a year, if the Canadians struggle again, no matter if the blueprint is being built, it's going to be fire the coach, fire the GM. And I think that Montreal needs to learn right now that, and this season probably taught us to be a little more humble.
And patience is a virtue.
It is. It really is. And you look at how bad Philly was. And you look at how bad Pittsburgh was, and you look at how bad Chicago was. Frankly, I would take that model any day.
Any day of the week.
You know, this isn't baseball where it happens over 10 years. This is hockey. It happens over five.
Five.
And if you count this year as one of them, then we're four away from being real good.
Yeah.
Eric, thanks for the call, man.
No problem. See you guys.
See ya. Have a great night. And there you have it.
Good call.
Yeah. Eric always brings it. We always appreciate. We appreciate all of you. Yeah, and you. And you. You too. Even you in the car. You guys are all pretty cool.
Even Delman Young.
When he's not...
We forgive him.
Right, right. Yes, we're going to invite him to Passover next year. No, we'll forgive him on what is it, Yom Kippur?
Oh, you're asking me.
We'll atone. Well, and there goes how Jewish I am, right? There you go, ladies and gentlemen of Montreal. And far
asking
and wide.
Asking the Greek guy when the holidays are.
I love telling Ben in the MLB fan cave that, you know, Montreal's on your side. What could go wrong? And dead silence. Like, yeah, well, of course, Montreal's on my side. What could go wrong? Well... Hopefully we can live vicariously through Ben Christensen for the rest of the summer. Man, do I wish I was in that. Just having been there was cool. And I'll tell you, Jay, when we go to Fenway in August, we're going to film part one of my fan cave audition video, and you can do the show next baseball season.
All right.
And you can talk to me every week.
Deal.
Man, I'm not going to tattoo myself. I'm not going to grow a beard. But man, do I want to be there.
I think you'd be great there.
I think I could. I think I could withstand the.
Not that I'm trying to get rid of you.
No. This would be a good reason to get rid of me. But I think I could withstand the torture of watching 2,800 baseball games. I think it could just be something that I would thrive off. And well, in the meantime, we've got this little radio show, so we'll keep doing that and try to bring you the best damn show every single week. This is the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar. We'll be back in, 60 seconds or so. Toodaloo. Here on the Kaufman Show. Another wonderful night. Thanks to Jim Bomback from Newsday. Wonderful to talk about the Clemens trial with him. And he's been on top of that whole steroid thing since day one. So it was good to get some context and then to have it complemented by having Mr. Jeff Baker in studio, who remembers the pool party in Toronto.
Yeah.
And got to know Brian McNamee quite well. We'll have Jeff back on for sure. But it was great to have a real live, no-fooling baseball writer who's still on the beat live in studio with us. That was quite the thrill as we continue to cement ourselves as the baseball people in this city.
The self-designated baseball people.
Absolutely. The designated hitters, if you will.
Yeah. I'm proud of it.
Well, any other radio shows in this town where you can... Hear 80% baseball in the summertime?
Yeah. No. No. Absolutely not.
So we'll keep doing it because we enjoy it. And, yeah, the playoffs are on. And
yeah.
Playoffs are awesome.
We'll talk hockey. We'll talk soccer. We'll talk whatever you want.
We will talk whatever you want. And for the next 15 minutes or so, maybe 10, the phone lines remain open, 514-790-0990. I do once again want to give a little plug to our event on Thursday night. We're holding a benefit, an evening for Gary Carter, to raise money for the Montreal Children's Hospital, more specifically the Sarah Cook Fund for Pediatric Oncology, which is kids with cancer. And we're going to go celebrate Gary Carter, and it's going to be a wonderful night. And I just got the greatest piece of news today when Jay Farrar texted me and said that he would be there. Because I wasn't expecting you to show up. I thought that, the man would keep you down. And it's good to know that the man is going to let you come see your brother sing.
Yeah, my great owners and bosses.
Yes, thank you to the fine people at McLean's Pub.
Yeah, thank you so much for that, for allowing me a little time for you. Because, you know, I don't get to do much.
Jay, you're the manager. You have responsibilities down there.
I have responsibilities,
and,
yeah.
You know, as we know, when you're not there, the bar just, it explodes. It turns into pandemonium, chaos. I don't know how they'll manage for the 3 hours.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's what I tell people. But you know what? I couldn't miss this. Obviously, Dave, I'm going to support you and support the cause. I haven't seen my brother perform probably in 5 years.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's going to be great, too. As well, I'd like to see some of, you know, our listeners and there's going to be some personalities from TSN Radio 990 there.
That's right. Well, Mitch is emceeing the event.
Right.
And I know all you baseball fans will be very happy to hear that Terry Haig will be in attendance.
Yep.
My favorite. I grew up loving Terry Haig. And it'll be great to see him down there.
Sure.
From the station. I know that Connor McKenna will be there.
John
Bartlett and Sergio Mameso are coming down.
Yep.
And a whole other slew. Simon Salikas told me he's going to try and...
Amanda Stein. Yeah, a whole bunch of people are coming down. So you'll get a chance to meet some of the incredible personalities we have here at TSN Radio.
Old Balls himself, Brian Wilde, will be there.
Old Balls will be there.
Old Balls is coming down.
And, great.
Yeah, so that's going to be fantastic. And Stu Cowan from the Gazette will be there. It'll be a wonderful night. And so many of you, you called and you asked about when we were going to do something, when we were all going to get together. And I think that now is an appropriate time. We're not mourning and grieving over Carter anymore. We're there to celebrate. And like Jay keeps reminding me, it's an Irish wake.
Yeah, you celebrate a life, and you do it to some liquid, and you know it'll bring out the very best in everybody. I'd love to place some faces on those names and callers and listeners of our show. I'd like to.
Well, we got to put a face to a name today. Actually, we met Mr. Rabbit, Charlie Lapin.
We did,
which was pretty cool.
This stack of books and creepy laptop over there at Second Cup.
Well,
looking like my brother. That's what my brother does.
I'll tell you what he was looking like. He was looking like every student I know.
Yeah,
because I don't
guy.
Know any students on strike. So there was an example of not every student is out in the streets with their red square breaking windows. And you can remember that. It's important for you to remember that not every student is on strike right now. We have a tweet coming in from Eric. I'm assuming this is Eric that just called, actually. Do I have to buy tickets in advance? I would highly suggest it. They're going quick. I don't want to say how many are left because I don't know how many the bar has sold, but I have sold an absolute ton. And, I would get on that as fast as I can. Hurley's is open for another hour and 10 minutes, but I'm sure if you get down there tomorrow, you'll be able to get in before the deadline. Let's go back to the phones. And it's our friend Mike in St. Leonard. We will wish him a good morning. Hey, Mike, how are you?
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Very good, man. What's going on?
Good, good, good. Great show as always.
Thank you, sir.
Great guest. I've been following on Twitter after you mentioned last week about the Clemens case. So I've been following, you know, the same person who you
had.
Yeah,
Jim Baumbach. He's fantastic, isn't he?
Yeah, it's been excellent, actually, to figure out what's been going on with that. It's a question, you know, you look at him and you try and figure out whether he's innocent or guilty, but so much of his personality comes into play, it almost clouds your judgment.
Well, I just keep going back to the 60 Minutes interview where he came off so strong-headed that it was hard to believe him.
Yeah, that's it. You know, it's almost like it's more of his personality, his determination just to be who he thinks he is more than the truth even matters to him, I think. I mean, I don't know if truth ever matters in that guy's life. I think he just wants to be his image, like they mentioned, and winning. And he's kind of put his whole personality towards that I think he's almost like a bull in a china shop, you know?
Hmm.
And so anyways, we'll see what happens. It's hard. If he's innocent, I mean, good for him for standing up for himself. But, I mean, a little bit of humility never kills your case, you know?
You know, even if he is innocent, I don't see him getting into Cooperstown after this.
No, I don't. You know, there's a whole generation that I think is going to have to I mean,
a tone.
Yeah, I mean, even you look at Mark McGwire, he just kind of, you know, no one even talks about it anymore. And
no.
Barry Bonds, I don't think he even's going to have a shot. There'll be a few guys, maybe.
No, you know what? We had a Hall of Fame voter in studio tonight, and I didn't even consider asking him about those guys because I'm pretty sure I know the answer.
Yeah, it's a non-issue now. You're like you said, you're looking at other guys, like he had mentioned Tim Raines and stuff like that, guys who are deserving, who are
right.
not getting their fair shot. And so you'll have a whole generation of guys who won't even be mentioned. But you know what I wanted to talk to you about? I mean, I got to thank you so much for bringing on that guy a couple weeks ago for Sonic's gig.
Oh, my God. Wasn't he fantastic?
That was and the documentary is outstanding.
Yeah,
I mean,
it sure is. Sonicsgate.org.
Yeah. I mean, you can't say that enough. But you know what struck me about that? At the end of it, when I took a seat back and I look and see what happened there, more than anything, you know, you even had, after everything was said and done, another group of local owners who had money, who would have been interested in keeping it. And
a Microsoft guy, right?
Yeah, and it still didn't matter. You know, and you look at these commissioners, and you know, the funny thing is, at the beginning, when you see that clip of Bud Selig taking the Seattle Pilots to Milwaukee, it's like, oh,
yeah.
Man, you know Bud had to get in here somewhere. You know, Bud just had to show up and steal somebody's team, you know? You know, you just want to say, it's like, really? How could, you know, it's like, oh, but again, you know?
Of course.
But, you know, an amazing documentary.
I'm so happy you liked it. I was so happy that I came across it. And it was from Travis Nelson, the polemicist, who had tweeted to me about it.
Okay.
And then the Sonicsgate people followed me on Twitter, so I followed them in kind. And then sat down, watched the doc, and was, like, obsessed with it. It was just like, I need to have you guys on the show, and I want you on tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I thought that the contrast between them with the team leaving and David Gourlay, who was fantastic in studio last week, talking about Ottawa baseball and their renaissance.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it painted quite an interesting picture.
It did. And you know what? You know, like you had mentioned as well, too, I don't know how we get one done for the Expos, but I would love to see a documentary so detailed, intricate, with a real understanding, with all the facts into place.
Let's talk about it. You're coming down on Thursday, right, Michael?
No, I'm going to try and be there for sure.
Good. So let's sit down and figure out how we can start planning getting that documentary made.
You bet.
And maybe there'll be some footage from the Gary Carter tribute that'll make it to the movie.
Well, you've seen Noz Amor, right?
Yes. Yes, I have.
Yeah.
But Noz Amor leads off with the team potentially getting the stadium built.
Right. And it takes place before the demise of the team.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So. Back when everybody still thought that Loria was the great white hope.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Boy, were we sold a bill of goods on that one, huh?
Just one more question. Actually,
sure.
Let you guys go. I just finally saw Moneyball. I wanted to know your take on the movie.
You're one better than me, man.
Yeah.
I have not seen it yet. I saw that it was on the Movie Network over the weekend, and
that's why I'd seen it, actually.
I decided to watch live baseball instead.
You know,
it was the same night that Bryce Harper was making his debut,
okay.
And I watched the Vin Scully calling
seen it.
Bryce Harper.
I saw Moneyball.
I read the book. I love the book.
Yeah, I think it would make a better book than I thought the movie was a little bit overrated. I mean, it is a baseball movie, and Brad Pitt was meh. Man, I think it was there. It was
yeah.
It was good to watch, but I didn't see anything special about it in any way except for that. Like I said, it probably makes a better book.
I love
the
book.
Movie.
I read the book on a flight.
Yeah.
I think a flight to Vancouver, and it just tore through it. It was a wonderful.
Brad Pitt doesn't look anything like Billy Bean.
Who cares?
Yeah. You know, I care.
And Jonah
I've
Hill.
I've seen
looks,
Brad Pitt the whole time.
Jonah Hill doesn't look like Paul DePodesta.
Yeah,
either.
But nobody knows what that guy looks like.
You know what killed me about that movie, though, is the way they omit so much about the talent that was actually on that team. They omit Zito. They omit Tejada. You can barely even see them in the actual clips they use. They're not even mentioned. And it's almost like if, wow, Billy Bean, what a stud. It's like David Justice and a bunch of AAA nobodies and
right.
The genius and look at how good.
There was kind of a major league ring to it, and it seemed to be a little bit of a self-absorbed autobiography.
Yeah.
I did not feel that way from the. Have you read the book, Michael?
No, I haven't read the book yet.
Okay, the book does not. You don't have that feeling. You're on a roller coaster ride, and they go on that crazy winning streak, and it's a wonderful feeling.
Yeah, the key is because they got Brad Pitt for the film. They had to make it about Brad Pitt, and a.k.a. Billy Bean.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, you have to put a little bit more emphasis on the character.
Yeah.
So that's probably why they omitted a lot of the other. They didn't want the character shine to be taken away by guys like Barry Zito and so on.
Yeah, don't let any facts interfere with a good hockey.
No, absolutely not. I'm surprised they didn't. I'm surprised they didn't have them win the World Series at the end of the movie.
You know,
Michael, thanks for the call, man.
Have a good evening, guys.
We'll speak to you soon. Hopefully we'll see you on Thursday. And I think that wraps
up. That was my
up,
weekly movie review.
There you go. Oh, you know, we could do that every week. Do you watch a movie a week?
Yeah, but no.
Okay.
The last time I went to the theater, I saw Tropic Thunder. That's how long it's been.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I love that movie.
I can review old movies.
I'll tell you, that's my favorite Jay Baruchel movie.
Is it?
I loved that movie.
Better than Million Dollar Baby?
I don't think of that as a Jay Baruchel movie.
Okay.
That's a movie that Jay Baruchel's in. That's an Oscar-winning... Okay, add a trap me on the Oscar-winning picture Best Picture. Jeez.
There's one thing I'm good at, it's film.
You're good at many things. That's why you're my co-host.
Thank you
for your time tonight.
That's what I do.
Jimmy, merci. John, thank you, sir. I want to thank our guests, Jim Baumbach, Jeff Baker, Jason Portnoy, Ben Christensen, Craig Brownstein. Look at that off the top of my head. Not too shabby.
Well done, Mr. Kaufman.
Thursday night, Hurley's Irish Pub, May 3rd. Having a big party to honor the kid. And I want you all there. Tickets are $30. They're available at Hurley's. Get them now. This is going to sell out. Lots of great bands. And I heard this song live this week. There's a video out there, Jay, of me singing along to this song that my friend Kristen Busandri filmed. It is embedded for now. One day it may show the light of day. I was told that I look like a golden retriever watching its owner cook a steak.
Wow.
Is there anything happier than that? Can you picture anything happier than that?
It was at the Corona.
This was the Joel Plaskett concert.
Yeah.
And it made me so happy that he played Love This Town. I put a video up on YouTube of him doing Workout Fine. Type in Corona Theater Joel Plaskett. You'll find it. It's 10 minutes long. He does an April Wine medley.
That's awesome.
It was amazing. It was amazing. Anyway, let's listen to it. And we'll be back. If you saw my
there's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town.
You've been listening to The Kaufman Show. For Jay Farrar, I'm Dave Kaufman. And we'll be back next week.
What'd that sound like?